Shoes. Recorded live.
Hi, good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance Monday night meeting. Got quite a few things I guess we'll go through. First, I'd like to just cover a few things that we're still working on trying to get coordinators. We have 31 state coordinators presently, and we still need coordinators for 19 other states. So hopefully people will stand up to that. Just give us an email, tell us that you'll take that state coordinator position, even if it's temporary until someone else takes it. But we need people to communicate with one person for each state because we're going to start having some state meetings soon. And, of course, everyone is invited to that state meeting. It's not going to be a closed meeting. But we do want to really focus in on the state leaders, or shall I say really coordinators, and talk about what it is that we all need to be doing and reporting concerning how many, grand juries have been constituted within your state. And so the coordinator is a very important, position because, again, that's the person we're going to release information to until people are, actually have run the election, and then we'll start releasing information directly to each of those, one person in every county. But you have to constitute a grand jury. But until that happens, at least one person within your state will have all the information, all the people within your state, so that you can kind of coordinate everybody together. So the states we need coordinators for, I'm going to read them. You can go up online and look for yourself. Just go to nationallibertyalliance.org. On the left side, click on County Organizers. Right underneath the County Organizers, just come down a little bit, and you'll see, click here for State Organizers, and you'll be on the State Organizers page. We need someone for Alaska, Delaware, Idaho, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Mississippi, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Oregon, Rhode Island, Texas, Vermont, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. So all those states, we need a state coordinator. Anybody who wants to volunteer for those states, you're in that state and you volunteer for that state, just send a message to me. Send it to John at nationallibertyalliance.org and just tell me you want to be the state coordinator for that state, whatever state it is. Give me your name and your state, and we'll put you up on the board. Any other concerns or questions or problems with the website, you can go to support at nationallibertyalliance.org. Okay, so anyway, we do need these leaders, and people need to step up to these positions. Couple of things. We did go to Greene County today, which we'll talk about soon, but there are other people I've been talking to the last couple of days, and the situation that came up with us when we're up in Greene County, and they wanted us to talk to a lawyer. We don't talk to lawyers. This is never talk to a lawyer. If a lawyer writes you a letter, you don't bother answering that. If that lawyer is answering on behalf of a bureaucrat, then you write to the bureaucrat. You let them know, we don't talk to lawyers. If you want to copy your lawyer this message, that's fine. We're responding to you that you responded through the lawyer, and we don't accept that. We demand that you, or we expect that you communicate directly with us. Every person that works for the government, any government service, whether they're elected, appointed, or just hired help, they have a duty. And that duty is to answer us. Why would they go to a lawyer to answer us? I mean, they do it so often they don't even think about that, Meanwhile, the lawyers help them to break the law, and they're going to go to jail for it. And you're going to see what we're talking about soon when we talk about Greene County today. Don't talk to any lawyers. If they respond to lawyers, just go back to the person you were talking to and write a letter back to them, telling them we don't respond to lawyers. So as far as we're concerned, you didn't answer us. out in Pennsylvania, we had a situation where people were filing papers. And in the filing of papers, they talked with them for quite some time. And then they sat around waiting for someone to come to talk with them, which they thought it was their supervisor or somebody, but it turned out to be a lawyer. And then they spoke with the lawyer for quite a bit of time. And all they were doing was trying to file the paper for a memorial with the court clerk. And the lawyer then interpreted this as a court case and filed the papers for them as a court case, and a civil action was opened. And they paid, I think it was $135 for that action. I got the paperwork, and when I finally got around to looking at it, I was going to write a letter in response because I saw that a lawyer had responded to the filing of their papers as if it was a court case. It never dawned on me that that's how they accepted it. I thought the lawyer was just a moron. But in any event, when I looked at the paperwork and I looked at the filing, it did say civil court of that county within Pennsylvania. So a court case was filed, and they, of course, are going to go now and squash that that court case to remove it, because the last thing you want to do is get into a court where a judge tries to make a decision on what we're doing. We're not asking for permission or anything. Let me go back to the original way that I've been trying to tell people. And maybe that's the problem, is, you know, some people are thinking some other things or other people are saying things, but it's important to do the procedure the right way. Some people have knowledge of common law, and they understand how things work, but you have to combine that with process and procedure. Process and procedure is good. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's a necessity. It's logical. It's obvious. We need procedures and processes in the court. And as a matter of fact, that's what's given us power, those procedures and processes in the court. So a lot of people who may know how things work on the common law side of things, but if they don't know how the policies and the procedures work, you know, they may do the wrong thing. And we can't just make this up as it goes. I can assure you, I can tell you, I'm not aware of any common law courts who have really had success. We know that there's a court down in Florida that had some success, but they're not working under the auspices of the court. I recently found that out. I was surprised to find that out. I thought they were meeting in the courthouse. So that's why some of their cases go ignored, and some of the cases they somehow do get through. But I understand that the guy that's doing this is a lawyer or an ex-prosecutor, so he kind of has some knowledge of things. But I'm surprised that he's operating outside of the courthouse. California and some other places, you know, I haven't heard of anyone that's been, you know, working from within the courthouse under the auspices of the court, and therefore, you know, they're not having great success. They may allow them to have some success. You know, they'll pick and choose what cases, I guess, they'll go through. I don't know. And many other places. And the reason why they're not having success is because they don't know the process and the procedures. And then when they think you don't know the process and the procedure and you start to follow through some of these things, they'll figure, yeah, you're just lucky maybe. You figure, you know, you filed it then, you really didn't know. Well, if you know how it works, you know, then you go to the next step and the next step and the next step. And again, that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today, because we're going to share with you what we're doing up in Greene County, New York. So it's extremely important that people pay attention. And if they don't know what to do, don't take a guess at it. Don't, unless you really know what you're doing, don't do it. Okay? Just, you know, come to the Monday night meeting, give me a call, call Gerard, call somebody, and find out which is the way, you know, what's the proper process or which is the proper way to proceed. This is extremely important. If this happened in New York, we would be in big trouble at this point. Because believe me, they will, in New York, they hate us and they know us, and they would look for any opportunity to shut us down, and they would use that opportunity to find whoever it is that got into that court to hold them in contempt, and they'd be going to jail for every time we'd be filing a paper somewhere in the state, because they got them in their corporate system, they got them under their jurisdiction. So it's very dangerous. Some things that people could do could get them in trouble. So we need to know what we're doing. We need to know what the law is. And, you know, there is no law preventing us from doing this. Obviously, they can't make a law because it's an unalienable right, and it's written down in the Fifth Amendment. They've been trying to do it. And, you know, we posted a paper last week. We mentioned it. People should go up and read it, and it's up on our documents page. And it's Jurist Documents and Services. And the paper, one of the papers we filed, it was called Grand Jury Under Attack. It was written in 1955. And if you haven't read that, it's about 38 pages. If you haven't read it, you got to read it. It gives you a good idea what the battle is all about. And it makes it extremely clear that it is the Bar Association that is launching this attack against the grand jury. And they started the launch of this attack at the very beginning of our nation. As a matter of fact, it starts off speaking about this one individual, I forget his name, a justice, Winston or something maybe. But anyway, he was giving a lecture in 1790. President George Washington and his wife had attended that lecture. And that's where it all starts, that they're talking about how the attack has already been on to shut down the grand jury. They have not succeeded on that. They can't succeed on that. They claim they succeeded on that here in New York, but they did not. We found plenty of history showing that the opposite is true, as a matter of fact, and it was confirmed in 2001 here in New York that the people still believe that they want the grand jury. They don't understand the difference between, you know, the grand jury that's a puppet grand jury and a common law grand jury, because they're not educated. But they knew enough to say that they wanted the grand jury to continue, because they did try to shut it down here in New York numerous times. In 1938, there was a huge movement, and they really thought they were going to accomplish it. But instead, the people of New York reinitiated the original intent of our founding fathers, and that was that the grand jury will never be done away with, ever. And they reconfirmed that here in New York in 2001. Meanwhile, they're telling me, all these lawyers are telling me this has been done away with in 1849. It was done away with some federal rules in 1949. And all these other things. What's very interesting is I talk to these people, they are so beside themselves that they're pathetic. They'll tell me that United States Supreme Court rulings don't overrule the way things work here in New York, that they work under the New York Constitution. They ignore the Supremacy Clause. They ignore United States Supreme Court rulings. They might use them to support a case, but they actually work off statutes. They're statutory courts, and therefore they're not courts of record. They're not common law courts. And that's clear. When you look down into the way things work. And so they'll tell me, you know, wow, that's federal. We don't abide by that. Oh, those are federal codes. It has nothing to do with us. But then yet they turn around and tell me that in 1949, the federal government had done away with it, and they wrote codes to prevent people from having common law grand juries. And I'm quite surprised all of a sudden now they're holding up federal code, okay? And by the way, federal code, that didn't happen in federal code. What they did in federal code was because the people were not organizing it themselves and the courts were calling for the grand jury, they just put it into the procedure the way the courts would call for a grand jury. That's all they did. So they had to, you know, they don't do anything without something being in writing. They have to have a rule, a policy, a procedure, a code, a statute, something. And when they don't have one, they stand there and look at you like you got six heads. Because they don't know what to do. And that's good. So, but anyway, this was sent to me. I forget who sent it to me, but I'll tell you what, it's a great synopsis of the jury under attack here in the United States. Now, I wrote a three-page paper, kind of a synopsis of it, you know, maybe just a couple paragraphs, and I wanted to make certain points. And we named it, Without the Jury, There Can Be No Liberty. I think we actually renamed it something else. Well, that's what it is written up there right now. So if you wanted to go read that paper, it's three or four pages. I'm looking it up real quick if I can get to it. Let me see the documents. We're going to rename that. I'm just changing the name, so you may later at some point go up to read this article and it'll have a different name. It's going to be Without an Unfettered Jury, There Can Be No Liberty. That's going to be the name of the document. Right now, it holds the name of Without the Jury, There Can Be No Liberty. So, I tried to make a short version of 1955, but really what I was trying to do is lay out the fact, particularly here in New York, that they're lying. These people are liars. And I made it clear in this one that it is the Bar Association that is assaulting the grand jury. They need to shut it down. Now, just think about these lawyers and judges. They don't want the people in the courtroom to watch what they're doing. They want to be totally, they don't want no oversight. They want nobody to watch, nobody to see all the criminalities. There's a lot of other documents up here on our website that you might want to go take a look at. Let's talk about what took place up at Greene County, and then if we have time, we may get into details of the King's Bench. We briefly talked about that last week. Every week, I'd like to try to cover something special for educational purpose. I'd like to look at the King's Bench. If there's anything you need to understand, it's the King's Bench. This is the pivoting point. It is the pearl. It is the foundation. It is the cornerstone of common law, the King's Bench. And so it is so important that you understand it. Now, we go into courts, we don't want to necessarily bring up the name or the word King's Bench, but there is a Latin phrase for it. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, so I won't try. But we'll cover that, and that's what you'd want to write in your papers, the Latin form, and then you could do a footnote on what Black's Law Dictionary interprets that as being, and that'll go over a lot better. They don't read footnotes anyway, but those who really get to the bottom of this thing to look at what's going on, they'll clearly understand it if they really read it properly, carefully, and look at the footnotes. Greene County. We went up to Greene County. We've been trying to get up to Greene County for 2 weeks, and I've been bogged down with a number of things. I had some personal problems that really have taken a lot of time away from me over the past week, so we weren't able to do anything until this morning. Three of us went up, and we spoke with the clerk. The chief clerk was out. Went to a dental appointment or something. She was expected back later. We spoke with the clerk, who was reasonably polite to us. As a matter of fact, this was the clerk who actually gave us some papers that we wasn't supposed to have. From the conversation, we knew last time they were quite ignorant of what's going on. From this conversation, we knew that even more how ignorant they were. So that we kind of gave them a lot of information. I had brought some papers up there. We gave her some papers so that she could understand how things work. As a matter of fact, without an unfettered jury, there can be no liberty was one of the papers I gave her. It's a synopsis, like 3 or 4 pages, of the assault upon the grand jury and how the grand jury has not been lost, not only in the nation, but particularly here in New York. It's been confirmed numerous times. So they're just lying. And they always lie. They tell you the common law doesn't exist no more. Well, then you don't have a Fifth Amendment. You don't have a Second Amendment. You don't have a First. You don't have anything if common law doesn't exist. They say that they have to operate under statutes, which, again, they can't. That's what they're doing. But anyway, we went up there. I also have another paper, which I'll go through very quickly. And this was an important point. And matter of fact, I know we're not going to get to the King's Bench tonight. That's for sure. We'll cover the King's Bench next week because I want to go over some authorities and some situations and what's going on in Greene County. Our purpose to go to Greene County was really to do an investigation. These people are definitely frightened of us. They do not understand what we're doing. They're thinking maybe what we're doing is right. When we do talk with them, we're very logical and obvious. We bring paperwork. We bring laws with us, whatever codes they have that support what we're doing. We bring the Constitution, Supreme Court rulings. And they've been looking at it, and they know. They know there's something to what we're talking about. And I talk to them straight. I let them know we got to stop all the criminal activities and all the destruction of the people's lives going on in all of these courts, you know, especially the family courts. You know, there's some serious problems going on there, and people's lives are being destroyed, children are being destroyed. So we kind of talked directly to them about the fact that there's criminal activities going on, and we're here to stop it. But we, one of the points we want to make to the clerk, and again, we're up there to discover what happened to the paperwork. We filed in Greene County papers for an indictment on four judges here in New York, two of the highest court judges in New York, and two other administrative judges, so four judges altogether. And now we're going up there to make the process work. And so the question to the clerk is where's the paper? Now, the clerk, and we'll talk about the chief clerk. The clerk that was answering our question said that the paper wasn't here. And I says, you mean it's not in the file? She says, oh, no. I just don't know where she put it, meaning the chief clerk. So, okay, I certainly hope it's here because we're expecting that. We want to get a certified copy of it. And we want to see on that certified copy, obviously, the timestamp, because it should have been recorded. We want to make sure she did her duty. Okay? So we'll look for that timestamp. In New York Constitution, Article 1, Subsection 6, this is our authority, the power of the grand jury to inquire into the willful misconduct in the office of public officers and to find indictments or to direct the filing of informations, which is the same thing as a presentment, in connection with such inquiries shall never be suspended or impaired by law. You see, there's no law they can do this. That's the New York Constitution. So thankfully, we're still protected in our New York Constitution. And, of course, we have the U.S. Constitution. We're up there to examine the docket, okay? And we brought these laws, and I'm going to post these laws. Now, a lot of them are New York Penal Codes and New York Constitution. But there's also some U.S. stuff in here, U.S. codes. And remember, codes and statutes are good when they're used properly. They should be written for bureaucrats, for elected individuals, for people who are appointed, hired help, you know, all the hired servants. They are controlled by statutes, and to them it's law. To them it's, you know, if they do a certain thing, it puts forth a punishment, 1 year in jail or a fine up to so many thousands of dollars or whatever the case may be. And that's legal and it's proper. Because they're given certain authorities and certain powers, and when they abuse those powers, we need code to go out after them, and that's what we have. So our main authority here in New York, and so I'm going to post this up here. I think I'll call it authorities and codes for the clerks, something like that. And it's two pages, and again, it's mostly New York, but I'm sure if you go looking into the codes in your state, you'll find codes for your state. People that are involved in and studied in the common law, those are the people that would want to try to maybe write a paper for their state. And if they write a paper for their state with their codes, looking for similar things, you will find it in your state. You get a copy to us, and we'll post it up. Soon we're going to have the new website up, and when we have that up, you'll be able to post it on your state site. Every state will have a place where they can do postings of that nature. So they should be doing some homework on that and have that posted up. It'll be very helpful to those in your state. But anyway, we're going up there to examine the dockets. Here in the New York Judicial Law or Codes, Section 255B and 16, it says dockets of the clerk to be kept open to the public during business hours to search and examination. You see, if they refuse us access to it, there is the law, and we will make that clear to them. Okay, they have to obey their own rules. And if they break those rules, they're breaking the code, they're breaking the law. We want to certify that it's on file. Section 255 of the New York Judicial Law says the clerk is to search and certify files. So if we request it, they're to search for it. Certify it and give it to us. Now, they'll charge us $5 or $2 or something. For right now, we'll pay it, but those fees got to go away. Just think about this. Why do you go to a county building or to a courthouse, and why do you have to pay this money to get in to use the service or to file papers or whatever it is you have to do? We paid for that building. We're paying for the heat and the air conditioning, the ventilation, the HVAC in that building. We're paying for... all of the salaries of all of the people in those buildings. We're paying for all of the office equipment. We're paying for the paper. We're paying for the electric bills, the phone bills, and unfortunately, we're paying lawyer bills. That's got to stop almost immediately. We must spend a fortune in lawyers. But we're paying for all those things, and then you go up to a window and they say they want $310 for a certain filing. Who the hell are these people? That's got to stop. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled already numerous times that it's not appropriate, that people do not pay for fees. They've already paid their tax money on it. They're not going to pay fees for that. That goes probably into their CAFA funds, and that's the game they're playing. That's got to stop. And we're going to talk about CAFA later on when we're empowered. There's some interesting things about that and what we may do. Okay, so we want the certified files. There's also Section 240.65 here in New York Penal Code, unlawful prevention of public access to records. When records are willfully concealed or destroyed to prevent public inspection, which act or failure to act is designated as an act of official misconduct and is a violation. So that's a criminal act. So it's official misconduct. Did the clerk file the true bill? And was it dated properly? Section 195 of New York Penal Code, official misconduct by knowingly failing to perform their duties. And so, again, this is a Class A misdemeanor. Who is obstructing, the question we want to ask, who is obstructing the administration? Is it the clerk or is it the judge? And you see, we're going to wedge and force the clerk to answer this question. And if they don't answer it, then silence is admittance, and they will be indicted. So who is obstructing it? Obstruction of government administration in the second degree by intentionally obstructing, impairing, or perverting the administration of law, government function, of performance of official functions by intimidating, force, interference, or unlawful act, which act or failure to act is designated an act of official misconduct and is a Class A misdemeanor. We asked for a copy of the judges, and we're going to ask for the clerk's oath. We did get one of the judges did respond up there. He's retiring in January, but he did respond with his oath. He didn't respond with his bond. But the other judge who is continuing up there, and he's the guy that's the troublemaker, we believe, he did not give us his oath. I did call down, and we'll be talking about this in New York, and I think everyone in every state needs to find out where they keep the bond, where they keep the oaths. I found out that wherever the chief administrator of the unified court is, and you'll find that in your state, wherever that place is, that's the office. That's the people that have it right there. They keep it in the chief administrator's office. Their clerks hold on to the oaths throughout the entire state. At least that's the way they're doing it here in New York. So we as grand juries, we're gonna demand a copy of all of the oaths of every judge within our counties. And we're going to put them on file, and we'll post them up online, and we're going to look into these oaths. And that's an intimidation also. That's why we're going to do that. Bonds, it turns out that they don't have bonds here in New York. The way they said it is, most of them don't have. That probably means all of them don't have. Most of them don't have it. What did they say covered it? Some government agency, the controller's office takes care of covering that. What the hell is that supposed to mean? The controller's office takes care of covering the bond? That means you and I, the taxpayer, if we pull the bond, we're taking money out of our own pockets to pay ourselves. Who are these people? We got to fix that. If they can't get a bond, then they can't take office. It's probably too expensive. Well, that's tough. I understand why it's too expensive. But, you know, when we bring it back to common law, it'll be a lot cheaper. They'll need a bond, because if they abuse their powers, we're going to pull that bond. So, again, something we're going to have to talk about and make some kind of a plan on how we're going to deal with that in the near future. Copy of the judge. Okay. If the clerk does not cooperate, Section 205.55, New York Penal Code, hindering prosecution. known as a Class B and a Class C felony. Now, they are hindering prosecution because we have indicted four judges, and these judges have not been arrested and arraigned and fingerprinted. That has not taken place yet. And to push this paper through will make that take place. And we're going to talk to you about how we're going to push that paper through. Basically, what we're talking about is going to be the assistance and how we do that. We have another code. It's 205.60, hindering prosecution. Also, again, a B and C felony in the second degree, which act or failure to act is designated an act of official misconduct and is a Class E felony. Okay. The other one said in the third degree, known as a B or C felony in the third degree, which act or failure to act is designated an act of official misconduct and is a Class A misdemeanor. So we're looking at misdemeanors and felonies. And we're looking at more than that, as you're going to see shortly. We also have misprision of treason, knowledge of treason, and contempt against the sovereign. That's in a U.S. Code 18, subsection 2382. Whoever having knowledge of treason conceals and does not make known the same to some judge is guilty of treason for contempt against the sovereign and shall be fined under this title and or imprisoned not more than 7 years or both. Now, there is no limit. It's unlimited, the fining. 7 years, up to 7 years in prison for misprision of treason by not reporting the treason. Treason has taken place and it's not being reported. High treason in English law, treason against the king or the sovereign, as distinguished from petite treason, which might formally be committed against a subject. Treason consists of two elements, adherence to the enemy and rendering him aid and comfort. And these people are guilty of subversion of the Constitution. As a matter of fact, subversion ultimately is focusing directly on the Constitution. So that's the definition of subversion. If you're going to try to get someone out of office and you're plotting and planning, and you know how you're going to get this person out of office and put someone else in there, that's not subversion. Of course, they'd like to call it subversion. But anyway, clerks are to do their duty. These are another New York Penal Code, 210.15, perjury of oath. And that's the other thing. The clerk has taken an oath. The chief clerk must have some knowledge of law. They should be, at minimum, a paralegal. In some cases, they are lawyers. I happen to know that. But they should be, at minimum, a paralegal. And they need to take an oath. When we talked to the people up in Greene County, they were perplexed by the fact that, what are you talking about, taking an oath? They didn't realize that they had to take an oath. Now, I don't know if the clerk took the oath and the other clerk just didn't know it, but we're going to find out, which we'll be talking with her tomorrow. We have an appointment at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning to deal with all this. So high treason. Also, there is treason. There is also felony rescue. Okay, and felony rescue. She's guilty of because, and she actually, this is conspiracy, and she actually has this in writing. She writes in a letter dated November 7th when we had inquired and gave her the command that she is to answer us with a quo warranto, sort of a notice of demand from the King's Bench, and she didn't respond properly, and she did respond with a letter that clearly was written by a lawyer, and it says, please be advised that Chief Administrative Judge A. Gail Prudente has authorized me, so she's now working with Prudente, has authorized me to notify you of her instructions to all court clerks and county clerks acting in their capacities as clerks of the court to reject requests to file documents, reject the filing of documents, which, again, it appears that maybe this document has been rejected, that attempt to establish common law grand juries. Now, it goes on to say your paperwork was then returned to, and because it provided no return address, so on and so forth. Now, they did have our return address. on our papers that we filed, and they have not filed to send them back because they know. They're I think, very concerned. So here, and she signed this on the bottom, so she just proved to us that she is involved in the conspiracy, that she is involved with the mistreason of treason. She has knowledge of the conspiracy, that she has broken her oath, and she is guilty of all the things we just read through, all of these codes. There's a couple more codes, U.S. codes, 2076, whoever being a clerk or of a district court of the United States, that's anywhere in the United States, doesn't matter. It doesn't mean federal government. It means anywhere in the United States, okay? Willfully refuses or neglects to make or forward any report, certificate, statement, or document as required by law shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. U.S. Code 182071, whoever willfully and unlawfully conceals or removes, mutilates, obliterates, or destroys or attempts to do so, documents filed or deposited with the clerk or officer of any court shall be fined or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. Then there's another, a neglect to prevent, and that also provides for $5,000 towards damages. I think this is on the civil side of things. It's U.S. Code 42. And here is the key thing. Silence is fraud. If she refuses to comply, if she refuses to answer, we will inform her every time that she refuses to comply, refuses to answer, to for us to find out who is actually stopping that paperwork, then we will inform her that silence can only be equated with fraud, where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. United States versus Tweed. And so we will remind her of that every step of the way. And I think she will fold. As a matter of fact, the clerk that was up there has already confessed the fact that, you know, that it's not really her. You know, she's being told that what she's got to do. Now, they wouldn't say, they did bring up Prudente, but they would not say that the judge up there. I said, well, there's only two judges here, and one of them we know is kind of out of commission, and he's leaving office in January. And new judge is coming in January. And so there's only one judge that could be stopping this whole thing. No matter what Prudente says, that judge is refusing to sign the papers, fill out the form, and move it forward to the prosecutor. That's his duty. He doesn't have a choice. He can't act as a tribunal in this. He must do it. And so he's refusing that command. So we're looking to find one of two things when we see this clerk. Either this clerk is going to be held liable, because they're going to admit through just silence and the fact that the letter they wrote and so on and so forth, that they're the reason why this isn't going forward. Now, maybe they have a partner in this and it's the judge, but if she doesn't tell us that, then we'll assume it's her, and later on we'll come in court and we'll indict the judge too. So now she'll be liable. And now a crime has been committed. Matter of fact, lots of crimes. I just went through a whole bunch of crimes that have been committed. These are all codes, New York codes and U.S. codes. And they require a certain, they're criminal codes, felonies. These are felonies and misdemeanors. And conspiracy, treason, high treason. There's extreme penalties for high treason. Extreme, the most extreme you can think about. Okay? She's guilty of all of these things. Or she confesses, look, I put everything in there. Here's the paper. It's been filed. It's the judge holding it up. So that's the guy. You see, we now are witnesses to a crime. We have three witnesses to a crime. We will do three affidavits. We will take all the law and the three affidavits. We already decided this in our last New York meeting on how we were going to go with this, that whoever the guilty party was, we're going to indict. But we're first going to give them the opportunity to fix it, because we want to be merciful. We're not looking for a war. We're looking just to come in and take our rightful seat in the courthouse. So we will give them their final warning 5 days, and we're going to be doing this in a writ of mandamus. Now, a lot of people have talked with me about doing a writ of mandamus. We have rejected or refused to do that because we didn't want to put ourselves under the jurisdiction of the court. But our studies in the King's Bench has led us to understand that, and we always knew that the writ of mandamus is an extraordinary writ that they don't understand, but it's an extraordinary writ, just like a quanto is an extraordinary writ, a writ of habeas corpus, an extraordinary writ, and it emanates from the king's bench, not from the magistrate, not from a statutory court, and any court that doesn't have a king's bench is no common law court at all. So we're not going to go to an administrative court, a statutory court, an nisi prius court, and ask them to do a writ of mandamus. No, we are the king's bench. We are the reflectors of the king, those who reflect the will of the king. The king are the people of our nation, particularly in New York. It's 19 million kings. We have to, on their behalf, reflect their will in the courtroom. And what is their will? Their will is the U.S. Constitution, the New York Constitution, and in all cases where it's not repugnant to the U.S. Constitution or the Bill of Rights. Their will is the Bill of Rights. Their will is the Declaration of Independence. Their will is the Magna Carta, and their will is all collectively of all the court cases that were not repugnant to the Constitution. That is their will, and we can exercise that will from the King's bench. And so when we go into when a court opens up, and this is we're going to get into this next week because we don't have time, but we'll spend some time looking at the King's bench. When a King's bench opens up, it's when a grand jury is impaneled. The King's bench opened up. It is called, that King's bench is called the Supreme Court. That's the Supreme Court. You don't really have a Supreme Court or a Court of Commons until that bench takes a seat. People take a seat on that bench. In other words, the grand jury is impaneled. And when the grand jury is operating outside of the courtroom with the power to arrest and fine for contempt, the authority and the power to investigate and require people to answer, they don't have a choice not to answer, unless they have the right to plead the Fifth for intimidation. But if they are a servant, they don't have that right. They have a duty to answer. Silence is admittance to guilt, period. So when you understand that, from that perspective, from that authority is where the mandamus is. We're not asking for a writ of mandamus. We're writing a mandamus, and we're going to give them 5 days. Mandamus means the king. We command. That's what it means. And this is what they're going to be commanded to do, to give these answers. And this is what we've concluded from our investigations. We're going to write this all up in mandamus. And this is what our intentions and what we are going to do should they not respond 100% to this we command you paper, which is a mandamus. And so if they do not respond, and again, we're not sure who, it may be both of them are guilty parties, maybe one of them are guilty parties, but someone up there, one of two people is a guilty party. That's a fact. When we're absolutely sure, now we'll attach our sworn statements, affidavits to it, and we'll let them know we're going down to the sheriff's office at a certain date or after a certain date, after the 5 days are up, and we're going to produce before the sheriff all of the laws that have been broken, the sworn affidavits of the laws have been broken. These are felonies and misdemeanors and treason, and it is the duty of the sheriff. He has no choice but to go out and arrest these people. And we'll also show that there has been an indictment. We'll write the indictment up and bring it all to the sheriff, and these people will be arrested. You see, it's a progressive move, and it's a chess game. We indicted the other three judges, but nobody is responding to do the right thing, and they haven't been arrested. Once these people are arrested for not doing their duty, someone has got to take their place. And then we go knock on their door and let them know, well, are you going to have these four judges in New York arrested? Are you going to have them fingerprinted? Are they going to be arraigned? And are you going to set forth the case to move it towards the prosecutor? Is the prosecutor going to call us so that we give them the rest of the evidence? And are you going to notify the local news that an indictment has taken place? And if they refuse to do that, we do the same thing again with the sheriff. Take it down, sworn statements. He has no choice. He's got rules, regular. He's got to follow the law, and we'll show him the law. And if necessary, we'll have him arrested if he refuses to obey the law. But I don't think he'll refuse to obey the law. There's no need for him to call an attorney on this. he's going to have the law in front of him, and he knows what the law. He's going to know what he has to do. But if he did go that route, then we'll go to see his undersheriff, and if he asks why we're doing that, it's because we're going to have him arrested now too. We're going to do affidavits that he's aware of a conspiracy, and he has not done anything. It is his duty now to arrest these people, bring them before the judge, and tell the judge, look, here's the conspiracy taking place. Here's the affidavits. Here's the laws being broken. Here's that the grand jury came. Whether they're grand jury or not, I don't know, but this is what people came and told us. And I had to respond, it's on your lap now, Judge. You see, this is the pressure. Okay, eventually this has got to break the news, and I think it'll break the news once we go national. And again, we're restraining ourselves from going national until we have the website up. So anyway, we'll open the lines up here now. Anybody has questions or a comment? I'm going to unmute everybody. And if everybody can mute themselves, star 6, be mute. Wait, switch voice. Everybody needs to mute themselves now. Star 6, everybody, raise your hand if you want to talk. We'll acknowledge you, and you can unmute yourself. So raise your hand, otherwise I got to mute you. There's way too much noise out there. Okay, anybody else? Sissy. That other person's got to go. Okay, all those people that are not muted, please mute yourself. Okay, I'm going to mute everybody. Everybody's muted again. If you want to talk, raise your hand. We'll unmute you one at a time. Otherwise, we can't even hear ourselves think. Jesse from PA, you're unmuted. Go right ahead. Gerard, you're unmuted too.
John,
yeah, someone's
Jay.
Talking?
Yeah, there's Jay.
How you doing, Jay? How you doing?
If you mute everybody, people can unmute themselves if they want to talk. So,
okay.
Because I just did that. One of the questions I had was, if we assess fines on people, where does that money go?
Say this again?
If we put fines on people, you know, if they can be fined and or imprisoned.
Right. Oh, well, that has to go to the injured party, which would be the people ultimately, and we'll have to figure that out. Obviously, the state cannot get that money because they take that money and they put it into their little plan for retirement there. You know, we're not going to permit that no more. That's a wrongdoing. So any fines will have to go to the injured party, and if the people collectively, like in this case is the injured party, we'll have to figure out how the people can benefit from those fines. You know, what can we do with those fines to benefit the people?
And are we going to be assessing the fines?
No, that's done by, look, at the king doesn't do anything. The king commands, and the king wishes, okay? So when we indict, We write a bill, a true bill of indictment. We place it into the file, and now the judge, his hand is forced to pick that his pen up and sign the paper and send it forward to the prosecutor. And if someone needs to be arrested, then the sheriff needs to go out to make the arrest. They could phone call these people up and say, look, you know, I want you to go down to the sheriff's office for fingerprints and arraignment, and we'll let you go on your own recognizance. Whatever they want to do, we don't care. The thing is they have to be arraigned, they have to be fingerprinted, they have to be brought in if they don't come in voluntarily. And whatever fine comes out at the end, it's going to have to be dealt with. We're going to have to figure that out because obviously it's not going in the right places.
And what I was thinking was if it's, you know, if there's a jail time of so many years, like we need to like make like a graph of like, 1 year equals $5,000 or something, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I think everybody's going to have to decide for themselves. But, you know, there's only two kinds of people that belong in jail, okay? Violent people, people who commit violent crimes, and judges. That's the only two people, in my opinion, belong in jail. Everyone else needs to be out of jail so they can pay recompense to the individual that they violated. They have to restore that person. So they have to be out of jail for that. And if they're a problem, we can always put a ring on them so that we know where they're at all times until they finish paying the until they finish restoring the individual they hurt. The judges in jail, I'd like to see them in their black robes street cleaning, and we can pay them a salary. We put rings on them, too, so that they get back into jail at the end of the day. But they can come out for 8 days. I'd like to see them in their black robes sweeping the streets. That's what I'd like to see. And whatever they're paid for that would go to the injured party, along with their bond that they should have had, which is a major problem here in New York. Now that they don't have bonds, now what? We're going to have the taxpayers pay for this? Are these people? Who are these people? I don't even think they come from planet Earth. But anyway, wow, it's unbelievable. New Jersey, number one, go right ahead. You're open. North New Jersey. Anybody else wants to talk, raise your hand. I see Jesse's got his hand up. I'll get you in a minute. North New Jersey, can you hear me? You've been unmuted. You're coming in without a name. You had raised your hand. Anybody who wants to raise your hand, press star 8 that wants to talk. Star 8 if you're on the phone to talk.
Hi, Jason Berg from New Jersey. How you doing there?
How you doing, Jason?
Fantastic. We have another meeting for Essex County, which is going to be coming up on the 17th.
Okay, is that for constituting?
That's for constituting. That's a reinstatement of the our. And I'm trying.
Okay,
again.
So you're going to do a declaration and take a vote for constituting a common law grand jury in a county.
Right. This will be our second county that we're doing. I'm the state organizer. And,
okay, and I'll make a note here to get up to Jersey and put that there are two elected at this point. When's the second one going for election?
The second one is going on December the 17th, Tuesday.
Okay, so I'll put two since it's on the books for going.
It's in West Orange at the Cody Arena. It's off on 280.
Okay, if you send the information to support@nationallibertyalliance.org, and Carl will get that. Let him know that you put yourself your name and your phone number as the contact. Tell him we got an election going, and we're giving them the location of the election, the date and the time of the election, and we will post that on the meetup group. So anyone that's on a meetup group from Jersey, they'll have the opportunity of coming. If you ask Carl for a list of all the people in Jersey, and he will give you a list of their names and phone numbers, and you can call those people up. You don't want to call people on the other end of the state up for an election on the other end of the state. So, but you can call the people in that county and the surrounding counties, ask them if they come out to support, so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much. I have a question about our embossing seal. Now, it's basically a dry seal that is raised. Is it? Would you recommend that we put carbon paper on it to make it visible? Well, you don't want it to be visible.
You could do that if you wanted. I never thought about that, and that sounds like a. That does make it raise it out a little better. You know, they also sell silver and gold stickers for, inch and a half, inch and three quarters, and 2 inch in Staples or Office Max, and they're purposely for the seal. And you could take these little gold stickers, 2 inch in diameter, and they got all these points around them, like a star's points. But you can put the seal on that. You can put that onto the paper and then seal it so it raises the paper and the seal, and it shows up in silver and gold. But it's not really all that important. Okay? You'll have the raised seal on, and it's there. It's obvious next to the signature. So I don't do it, but you could. There are people who have been doing it. So
again, I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I want to do what is the right. If everyone's following the same.
Yeah, you could do either way. If the people want to do that, fine. But personally, I just don't bother. I see it as an additional expense, and the seal is there. It's raised. It's seen. It's felt. It's next to the signature. It's seen.
The carbon paper is cheaper.
Absolutely, yeah. If you want, I'd like to take a look at that. I think I have some carbon paper. I got to see how that turns out.
Turn out well. All right, and I'm also, I was in contact with Morris County there, Carroll. Like, some people don't have the time, and I'm a go-getter, and I'm fixed on getting as many counties as possible. So we might have another one on the 30th. So, but again, I'm really having a challenge with the New Jersey libraries because they all have different policies. And
when we get in, we're going to fix that up. As a matter of fact, I think we're going to require whoever is in charge of the libraries got to go. How dare they remove the people's building away from the people, especially the grand jury. My goodness, they want to charge us or they shut us down. Who are these people? I don't know.
Well, again, the thing is, I'm a retired librarian. The thing is, you have the Board of Trustees that makes up the policy and procedures.
Well, they all got to go. They got to go.
Well, again,
I bet you they're all lawyers too.
Well, some of them have been there for so long they give petrified wood new meaning.
Yeah.
But I did speak with the New Jersey executive of the library, the New Jersey Library Association. I didn't get a call back from her, but she did speak to her colleagues on my concerns. On the issues, but again, this will come down again. I just want conformity that is easy to work with. I'm not looking to reinvent the wheel. I just want to have a standard template that, for example, corporations can't, businesses can't go into the library because they charge. All right, that's great, but you and I as common citizens or common sovereign people want to go in there and use the library for a meeting, and we can't. That's where it becomes disgrace against.
That's right. They whoever made that up. Look, there's something wrong with the people who made that up. This is our building. The purpose of it for us to go meet, to educate ourselves, to have meetings and different things for educational purposes, and if anything, the grand jury going in and being refused. I mean, come on. So
well, again,
yeah, you're going to have to fix that in Jersey. We're going to fix it here in New York because we have the same problem. I say get rid of all these board members and find all new people to handle this because they clearly have proven themselves to be something else. So,
yeah. Well, that's true.
All right, let me move on to the next person. If you got more questions, you can raise your hand again. And you got something on this matter you want to finish up?
No, I'm right now. I just wanted to, those are my questions, and I want to be able to be active and. Power to the people, as John Lennon would say, and thank God we had him to go forward. And in fact, I think this anniversary is coming up of his assassination. So,
okay.
I mean, he's one of the enemies of the state by Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, if you want to any more comments, raise your hand again. Let me move on to the next person, okay?
Thank you so much.
Next.
All right, bye-bye.
Huh?
Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see who's next.
John, we're being attacked by you smut guys over here in the tech chat.
Jesse, go right ahead. You're next. Give me a name. What's the name?
37. He signs in. He keeps signing in and out. We got to get the ISP tracker on this guy.
Well, look, that's why we're going to make a move hopefully next week to the new place. People are going to like it, the new setup and everything, you know. But anyway, if you give me some names, I'll try to get rid of them. Unfortunately, with talk show, I can't even give authority to other people so that they could be dealing with this problem. I mean, this is really, it's not a good platform for us. If people right-click them, they'll be ignoring them. So everybody could do that. We can all put them on ignore. I think that is that possibility there, Gerard? Go right-click on someone's name and see if you can ignore them. I think it does, and it puts a line through whatever it is that they're saying. So, but you always have these children, that come in and do
well,
these
things.
Well,
they sign out and they sign back in as somebody else. So,
they're immature, you know.
But their ISP stay is the same. I'm sure they're on the same computer, so they could be tracked. I got an ISP tracker here, so the FBI will be knocking at their doors in a couple days.
All right, Jesse, go right ahead.
I have six questions here. Should I ask the most pertinent and then get my hand back up for the others?
Yeah, and depends on how fast they go. We'll see.
Okay.
You know, I just don't want, you know, I want to get everybody in here. Sometimes people try to talk and then they wait so long and then they leave because they got to leave. So, but yeah, let's see how fast they can go. Go ahead.
All right, well, I'll ask the most pertinent first, okay?
Okay.
Is the filing in Westmoreland and Butler filing in PA done correctly? Because we know the one in Elk County wasn't, because I just heard you talking about that.
Right, let me tell you the way they should be filed. However you file them, if they've taken the papers, fine. This is how they should be filed. When your papers are all ready and you put the package together, it should be mailed with certified return slip. And it should be mailed directly to whoever, two individuals, one person who would be responsible for the clerk for the county to file it as a notice to all men. And the file on demand says right on the top, I think on the right side, I don't remember where, but on the top it says file under miscellaneous, so it tells them where to file it. Maybe you should highlight that so they can see it, because they always ask, well, I don't know where to file it. Well, we already told you, up on miscellaneous. This way they can't ask you for a fee. If the county sends it back, put it in the file, and when we finally get power, we'll bring it back to them and we'll force them to file it. Now, the county clerk, I mean the chief clerk or chief clerk of the court, that should be mailed to that person also, return slip, so on and so forth. And if they return it, well, woe is them. You know, you have the potential of holding them liable, and they're facing 20 years plus in jail, you know, because it's mail fraud to begin with. Now, we're not going to do anything like that, of course, you know, but we could frighten them with the fact of what the law says, and we'll use that as leverage. And if they need to be indicted, then we'll indict them. We do have to be reasonable because, look, if they're as dumb as we are, you got to understand, they're suckers just like we are. They've been lied to just like we are. But when we go and inform them, if they don't do their due diligence, they've taken an oath. They need to do their due diligence to check out what we're saying. And if we're coming with some authority or the appearance of authority, and they're afraid, they're unsure, I think they're doing their due diligence now to look into these things. Now they're going to become liable because you have no choice because, hey, ignorance is no excuse for breaking the law. You know,
okay.
So at some point they got to be held liable, but we want to be as merciful as possible. You know.
Okay. Well,
what,
I thought
what else?
I just want to follow up on that. Okay. I want to make sure I'm clear. And I told Jeremy, you know, not to file civil. I tried to make it as clear as I could to him how we were supposed to file. And I don't know where the wires got crossed. But,
right. Well, I talked to them for a while, and basically what happened was that they spent a lot of time, maybe as long as an hour or whatever, you know, but they spent a lot of time talking to the clerk and trying to get it through, and then they said, well, okay, let me call somebody. They thought they were calling a supervisor of some type, and they waited about an hour or a long period of time waiting for that person to come. When that person came, they spent a long period of time with them talking, and they told them what they were trying to do or what they were doing, and that person turned out to be a lawyer. They had called counsel. Counsel sent someone down to the building, and they decided to file it as a court case, and it became a civil case, and that's how that got happened.
Uh-huh.
But
so
they can retract that.
They were doing a used car salesman trick. Where they had him waiting around,
I don't know what his intentions were when he did that.
Okay.
Maybe he thought, look, let's just get this before a judge, and that's why he did it that way. And so he tricked them. It should be an easy thing. You know, if he's the filer, he should be able to pull that out quite quickly.
Okay.
And I told him he should ask for his money back. He was duped into that.
Right. Now, just to be real clear, Westmoreland and Butler, they filed them by mail, and they filed them with the criminal court clerk, and they filed them under miscellaneous. So when you send it in, you're going to need to know what the cost is so that you can, because they paid a fee, you know, so you need to have a certified, some type of money order or something to to go along with the filing.
Nobody should pay a fee for anything.
Okay, so they did in Westmoreland. What we're telling
people now is definitely never pay a fee. You know, before
okay.
we were saying, well, okay, if you want to pay the fee, you can get your money back later. But you see, if they're paying the fee and if they don't realize what's happening, and let's say they do this again to you, you know, they may not let the second. At some point when they realize a certain thing, they may see this as a strategy to get you into their courts so they can find you in contempt if you file another one of these things. Okay,
well, I was worried about, you know, that the fiat money and the legal tender note, you know, that it says that it is, that would somehow wrap us into their jurisdiction, you know what I mean? Something that I don't know is above my pay grade.
Yeah, that's all fraud. That's irrelevant.
Yeah.
We don't play in that game. Unfortunately, we're using the dollars as if they're money, but they're really debt. And you know, we should be saving any money we have in gold and silver, and eventually move to that. Eventually, we will when they pull the plug on the economy. So,
yeah.
So you should be saving.
All right.
And you know, junk coins are the best way to go. Junk silver, in my opinion.
So get rid of your 401k and put it all in silver.
Oh, absolutely. Those 401s are going away very soon. They're all going to bubble out and collapse, every single one of them. It's a matter of time. Anybody that is under 50, they're not going to see any of their retirement, and probably people under 60 aren't going to see their retirement because I think it's that close. Yeah, that's a bubble ready to burst. Even all the CAFA money, that's going to burst too. These people, you know, thinking they got all this money put up for their retirement, all these judges and everything, they're going to suffer the same thing all the people are going to suffer when the dollar collapses. The entire system will collapse. It's all just one big bubble.
Yeah.
And only
all
those who have silver are going to survive through this thing in any money form. Food and silver. Food,
okay.
Silver, and lead.
Well, I have the answer to that one now. I'll let you get back on to somebody else, and I'll raise my hand again.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Who's next? Let's see. James is number three. We have two, East Virginia. East Virginia, you've been unmuted. Go right ahead. Someone calling from East Virginia.
Hi, John. This is Jim Cook where Angels Fear to Tread. You're simulcast tonight, by the way.
Okay, great.
On that contempt thing, I found out from a guy who went to law school, if they say, well, this is a contempt of court, you've got to ask them this question. Is that civil or is that criminal? If the judge says it's civil, then you say, okay, show me the contract that I signed that makes this legal. And then if he says criminal, you say, okay, where's the injury, loss, or harm, and where's the victim? So you can easily thwart a contempt charge by forcing the judge to tell you what it is. And because you don't enter into any contract in a civil, then if he says criminal, then basically you say, okay, where's the injury, loss, and harm, and where's the victim? So that's one way to do that. But the reason, to get back to a statement you made earlier about the money, where would that money go? Well, don't you usually pay grand jurors, or don't you have expenses for filing these things in court? Wouldn't you put some of that money back towards that?
Well, no. You see, it's illegal to collect money for filing. We already paid for all the bills of that building, the people working for it. We paid for everything, including we've already paid for their retirement plan, their medical plan. We paid their salaries. We paid the fuel and the heat for that building, any vehicles they own. We paid for everything. Why are we going to pay again? We're not going to pay to file. When the people come back into a power and authority again, and they set things straight, that's another thing. And we're going to talk about these kind of things as we get a little further in. We need to go down to the clerk, you know, the one that was elected for the county clerk, and make it clear to them, stop charging people. And if you charge people again, we're going to hold you in contempt. Okay?
Okay.
So stop charging. Everything is free. The people have already paid for that. And we'll show them the Supreme Court rulings that make that point clear. People should never have to pay for that.
Okay. Now,
matter of fact, on our file and demands, I think we have that ruling on the file and demand. So you might want to look at that. But go ahead.
Okay, I have one other question. When you're setting up a grand jury, how many people do you usually impanel for a grand jury?
Grand jury is always 25. You impanel 25. They can whittle down. We're suggesting we're taking the number 12. I know the public grand juries can whittle down to a certain number if that happens, and then at some point then they got to redo everything. I guess I don't know, but 12 is the whittled down number. So if you start with 25, and then someone gets sick with the flu and they can't come in, and you're 24. And then someone's obnoxious and you're into the case, so you can't replace them, and you throw them off, you're 23, you know. But at some point, you can't whittle down any more than 12. The reason why we're suggesting, and again, you guys have to figure this out yourself. We're suggesting 12 because 12 is the size of the petty jury. And so it just seems logical, no less than 12. Now, remember, and this is important, and we're going to spend one evening in the near future focusing in on the structure and of the administration for the grand jury, which is four individuals. Those four individuals are not grand jurors. They're administrators of the grand jury. They're sent out on behalf of the grand jury. They're investigating on behalf of the grand jury. Everything they're doing, they're coming as administrators of the grand jury. The grand jury sent us out. Here's my card. I'm an administrator of the grand jury. They sent us out to investigate what's going on in this office. And then you go through your process. And usually if you go to investigate an office, you can show up and surprise them, but it's probably usually best to give them a call and say, hey, we're sending three or four people down there tomorrow morning at 9. We've got a lot of questions and concerns of what's going on in your office down there. They'll see you then. And that's it. And they'll show up and they'll introduce themselves as the administrators for the grand jury and that they've been sent down by the grand jury to investigate, and they need to answer every question and so on and so forth. So the job of these administrators, these positions that people are filling, this is their job is to investigate. Their job is to do is to orientate all of the juries, whether it's grand juries or the trial jury people. They need to be orientated. That's a 4-hour type thing. You know, you don't need all 4 years to do that. One of you could do that. You can kind of take turns with that as some of the job duties. There's paperwork to be done, phone calls to be made, phone calls to be received. There's all kinds of duties that these four people need to be dealing. They're working, you know, every day. They're going to be paid a salary for it. It's administrating the services for the grand jury. And now, obviously, as administrators and investigators, you can't sit on the trial jury because you've already believed they're guilty. That's why you brought them up against the grand jury to indict. So you can't sit on the trial jury. That's got to be fresh new people. So no one that sits on the grand jury or an investigator for the grand jury can sit on the grand jury, can sit on the trial jury if it goes to trial, if they indict. That's common sense. I mean, you could sit on the next trial jury for another case that you didn't investigate. It's a different story. You got four people. Only one of the four people will probably take the case before the grand jury. Maybe one will go in the morning to bring knowledge and thoughts and opinions to before the grand jury, and then another person from one of the other four may go in the afternoon or the next day. But there'll always be one of those four people with the grand jury for numerous reasons. Number one, they're going to set forth the case before the grand jury. Number two, if the state is involved and they're talking to the grand jury, one of us administrators want to be there to make sure that they don't abuse the grand jury. They don't influence the grand jury, making them to think that they have to do something that they don't have to be. So there's always got to be an administrator with the grand jury who's the knowledgeable person who's watching these things. And if the grand jury or the trial jury has any questions, they'd be asking those people. They would give them the answers or find the answers for them. They need an advisor. and that's what we are. We really shouldn't sit as a grand jury as much as we should try not to sit as a grand jurist. We may take on that for some reason or another. If it's a case that's very important, we might sit as a grand jury jurist. But we definitely don't want to be the foreman unless we have to be. But again, plenty of people, a foreman just, you know, keeps things in order. No more power to anyone else. Doesn't mean anything. So we should try not to be the foreman so we're not the signature, so that they can't say, oh, look, you're sitting on every jury. Oh, look, you're influencing everything. Oh, this, that. You know, we don't need that. So we have to, you know, be very careful in how what we do and how we do it. And obviously in the very beginning, the four administrators or the two or three or whatever you have at the time, when you have the whole state together and you're coming together as a unified grand jury, those would be the administrators coming together as the administrative grand jury. Whenever the grand jury comes together as an administrative grand jury, it should always probably be, no, not probably, it always should be the administrators. That's going to be a rare event. It's only going to happen in the beginning once or twice, and I doubt it'll happen for another 10 years. You know what I mean? I just don't see that happening often. So, again, we have to go through all this. I'm going to find one night to spend a half hour or 40 minutes or something talking about that. We'll lay it all out, and we'll write a paper on it.
Okay. That sounds great. Well, good night from where angels fear to tread, and it was nice talking to you again, John. We'll have you on the show a couple more times.
Great.
God bless. Take care.
All right. I appreciate it. If you got any more questions, raise your hand again. Okay. Let's see who's next. Number three. Oh, no, Jersey. Well, somehow you're number one again, but no, you're not next. James from Georgia. Number two, go right ahead. Cobb County, Georgia.
Hey, John. It's James.
How you doing, James?
I'm doing great, doing great. I've got a suggestion, and like I say, I've had lots of trouble right now. I've got a lot of people that have been viewing the website that we've got up, and I know that we're going to eventually change it.
Right.
And I know you do a good job in your, I guess it's the introduction, try and make sure that people know that this is not just a Christian religious-based
right.
project, but because of it, there's nothing on the initial front page, the first thing a lot of people are noticing is when it sees Bible study. And
mm-hmm.
a lot of the libertarians that I'm coming in contact with, the first thing they're stating is the fact that they're for them, it's not about religion, it's about, you know, and that's, they're being prejudiced to it because of seeing just the Bible study down there. I think it may,
well, I did put a link to the Bible study. It's on the bottom, it's on the left side, there's a link. On the new site, it'll be under a category, so it wouldn't even really be seen.
Okay.
It's a non-denominational Bible study. And people can do it or not do it. Mostly, first of all, we are a Christian country, a Judeo-Christian. And all the major religions acknowledge the Bible, particularly the Old Testament. So we all have a common beginning. All of us, anybody who starts at the Old Testament, we all worship the same God. His name is Jehovah. So we all agree on that. And we see God differently, so we try not to bring too much up on it. We're talking about principles. We're talking about the foundation. When we talk about justice, okay, if you go into the Magna Carta, you're going to see God all over the place. Let me tell you, they put him in almost every sentence. Our founding fathers did the same thing. The 17th century philosophers who our founding fathers studied, they did it often too. They made it clear, Webster and so many people made it clear, this is a Christian country. This is a country, and let me bring in the Jews and everybody. This is the God of the Bible is the key focus. But people who are agnostics, and an agnostic isn't necessarily an atheist. An agnostic is someone who just hasn't figured things out, thought it out, and just doesn't have any, you know, focus in on any real opinions on who and what God is, but they acknowledge the fact that a God exists. And the principles are the key, the morals that come forward from this, that's the key. You know, when you go into Black's Law Dictionary and you look up the word justice, you'll discover it is synonymous with virtue. And this is all focusing back to the Bible. Common law begins at the Bible. It goes back to Mosaic law. That's where it really all begins. And when it came into England, it was people who didn't have a particular religion. They acknowledged God, but they didn't have a particular religion. They were
I completely agree with what you're saying. But let me finish it
for the benefit of others. I want to try to address particularly what you're saying, though. Also, you know, when they came to England, okay, about 300 AD, they came with the idea that they wanted to, and they were already living this way. They were living under rules and principles and maxims, not rules, maxims and principles, and they established them out of pure logic. Okay, and the maxims were obvious. You couldn't debate them. And so when they came to England, they found the Bible, and they fused to the Bible, and that became England's common law, and it also became America's common law. So that's where we're at. We have biblical findings or foundations. Now, the principles we teach is a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. The two maxims are just logical, obvious things, you know, no injured party, no crime. Every injury must have a remedy. So that's what we're really focusing in on. But we, in general, we do talk in public. The key thing is this. You know, some people suggest that I should start with a prayer and some. Well, we're not going to take it to that place. In a private meeting, under certain conditions, we might do that, but we're not going to do that here. So we don't want to put, but we do want to bring God up. If we don't acknowledge Him, then we're not going to have liberty. Atheists may not understand this, and some people, agnostics, may not understand this or agree with this, and some other people. But anyone who knows God knows you're not going to have liberty without God. And if you don't acknowledge Him and bend your knee to Him, and however you want to worship Him, that's your business. That's none of anybody else's. If we don't do those things and acknowledge Him, we're going to be cursed and not blessed, because liberty comes with a blessing, not with a, or you get the curse and you don't get it. You can't have it without God's giving it to you. And so that's why we have to acknowledge God. We don't have a choice. And if we lose people because of that, I'm sorry that happens. We have agnostics that I talk to, and, they complain a little bit from time to time, but we still get along, and they still understand what we're talking about, and they're still with us. But if someone is that upset about it and they leave us, well, we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, we can't say to everybody else, hey, let's forget God because we've got two or three people that are insulted by it. You know, how we can't – look, I came to something a long time ago, and I lived by it. I can't please everyone, so you know who I please? I please me. That's who I please. I please myself. But myself pleasing me, in my opinion, in my person as a being, I'm pleasing God, because that's what I want to please. And I please myself when I please God. That's how I look at things. So we do offer that Bible study, and you can at the end of that, you can click on a link and you'll go to a website, which is another site that I put up, which is totally separated from this, which gets into further Bible studies if people want to do it. But that's their business. But the bottom line is it's just a very simple Bible study focusing on the four Gospels. It's non-denominational. There is no religion thing connected to it. It's just a really very serious word-by-word, line-upon-line, precept-upon-precept Bible study. So, but we'll do our best not to insult people. And I know
it's not really even about insulting people. It's basically just like you're talking about pure logic. That's, mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm agnostic myself. But I completely believe in what we're doing here, completely.
Right.
And it's, I guess you'd say, with some people, they do have that slight prejudice. And if they don't see, maybe even in our mission statement, we may need to put in there that it's non-denominational, that it's we welcome everyone, something that catches them right up front. I mean, because like I say, in your introduction, you did address that. But I think it needs to be addressed on that first page so that when someone comes in, they actually see that this is not just a Christian base or a religious base. It's for everyone that's seeking that truth, that justice.
Right.
And that's
our founding fathers. Our founding fathers acknowledged that too. That's why they called it nature's God.
Yes.
You know, originally, believe it or not, Jefferson had Jesus Christ in there. Okay. And they debated that, and they ended up with nature's God. Everybody agreed. Yeah, we have to be open to everybody. We need the Jews. We need the Muslims. And you know what? I read my Bible, so I know what the Bible says, and I know what the Bible says about the Jews, and I know what the Bible says about the Muslims. Look, if the Jews accept the words of Christ, they may not believe in who he is, what we believe, but that's okay. And he says, look, who's going to deny, really, the plain morals of Christ? Every Jew I ever met agrees with the morals of Christ, okay? So they accept him for his word's sake, and they get a blessing. Okay, so God's blessing them, and whatever that is, that's their relationship they work out themselves. The Muslims, the same way, they believe Christ is a prophet, and so therefore they get a prophet's blessing. So that works out fine too, you know. And for other people who are just accepting and going along with things, they get a blessing too because they're acknowledging certain things, there's something here, and they're like an agnostic. They may not have worked it out, or you haven't had an interest or a focus for whatever reasons, I don't know. But But you know, you're going along with it. The morals are a necessity. We have to have morals, and that's how we get them ultimately in foundations from the Bible. And you know, we'll work it out the best we can. I will look at that and see what I can put together and think and pray about that.
Okay. You can't.
You know,
you
and
can't
I do want everybody in. You know, we don't want to push anyone out, even atheists, if they're willing to put up with us. And believe me, I'm willing to put up with anybody, you know?
Well, that's it. United we can stand, but divided we'll fall. I mean,
That's right. That's why we don't make a big thing about it, but we bring them up to lift up the name of God. However you understand them, that's your business.
Right.
I tell people, go to your prayer closet, work it out. That's none of my business how you work it out. You know
right.
whether you're working it out, whether you're being honest to acknowledge the creator of the universe or not. If you want to create your own God, you know that you're doing that. But if you acknowledge the fact that there's some creator and you're doing the best, you can understand him through maxims, you can understand him through pure logic, you can understand him through the Bible. And of course, as you get into the Bible, I understand them more spiritually, okay, and more accurately, in my opinion. But I don't want to get into that with people. You know, we don't want to discuss those details because that's not what we get for.
This is not a forum to judge religion. This is a forum to judge the common law. Period.
Exactly.
That's where we need to make sure that they understand that. Yeah.
Right. Just the name of God is good enough. We don't need anything more
than
that. And again, I make it a point. Again, people have asked me or suggested, and I have not done it. I'm not going to start things off with a prayer. It's an inappropriate thing what we're doing at this point. It's not what we're doing. Okay. But it is possible I get together with small groups of people.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, I was asked to pray on the Crusaders radio station, and I said a prayer at the end. They requested it, and I said a prayer at the end. I acknowledged it. I won't run away from it either, but just certain places is not appropriate. At this point, in my opinion, it's not appropriate here.
Yeah, you stand on your principles, and that's it. You just like Christ. You don't judge other people. You know, that's not our place to judge it.
And that is the key teaching of Christ, not to judge anyone.
Right.
That's right. Yeah, Gerard, did you want to pipe in here?
Yeah, the bottom line is that you have to acknowledge that we have rights that come from no man. That's the bottom line. In other words, you have to take this business where one man can take another man's rights away. There's a higher ideal, a higher power there, whatever it is for you. Otherwise, you don't have the American experiment anymore, because that's what the American experiment is based on, is the fact that there's no man above another man,
right?
That our rights come from someplace else. If you don't have that, then you can't have what we have.
Exactly.
And so if you can't kowtow to that, then you need to go to a different country or something. Listen, when in Rome, you do as the Romans do. That's our basis of law, you know what I mean, that men cannot lord over other men, that there's this higher power that it comes from, and so there's that line in the sand, so to speak. And that's the American ideal, that's the American experiment, and that's what we have to have, and that's what we've lost, quite frankly.
Anyway, that's all I want to say. Yeah, and it's covered by nature or by the Creator. Either way, you can go either way. I mean, with people that are atheist or agnostic or whatever, you know, some people it's nature, some people it's Creator. That's where the power comes from. So it's all.
Yeah, and it is unfortunate that some people take this to a different. You know, when you read the Bible, as a Bible reader, I read my Bible. You know, there are a lot of laws. There's not really a lot of laws. There's really only two laws: love God and love your neighbor. That's it. That's everything. That's the whole enchilada, the Lord said. But the bottom line is there are 10 commandments. And look, at one of them is to keep the Sabbath day holy. Obviously, that's not a law that we are going to apply on other men. People who are unstable read the Bible and they think they have to apply other things onto other men that are spiritual. No, the only things we apply onto other men is the violation of another human being, stealing, murder, injury, you know, those things. But when it comes to the spiritual side of it, we don't apply that. You can't apply that to anyone.
No.
But that's the problem. That has been a problem in history. And usually those people, generally, and the Bible talks about those people. He says they're unstable, and the Bible becomes a destruction to them ultimately anyway. And the thing is that generally speaking, they're not really us. You know, take the Muslims. They got a bad rap. I want to tell you, they really got a bad rap. Okay, everybody think, most people I meet seem to think that all Muslims are wacky and this and that, and they believe in this crazy law, and nothing could be further from the truth. They kind of come from a certain background, and they're strict in certain ways, but nothing could be further from the truth, and especially those who have come to America and understand the Constitution, they're all for this whole thing, okay,
yeah.
And yet people shun them out, and we got to stop doing that. You know, look at If you give the picture to these people in other countries about the Ku Klux Klan or the skinheads or some wacky Christian cult, and there's quite a few of them, and that's what people see, and they think all Christians are that way, that's not true, you know? So anyway, a lot of it has to do with perception, and there are some people that take things to the extremes, and we're not going to permit that, obviously. We're beyond that, I think.
Yep.
I think America has come beyond that.
But all
unfortunately,
right, well,
you also left acknowledging him. But go ahead.
Hey, John, can you knock that news guy who loves flurries out of there?
Let me see what I could do.
Yeah, just knock him out. I wish I had a control because I'd take care of it. And
they're children, you know.
Dude,
but anyway, anything else, James, before we move on to someone else? Yeah, I don't know what happened to him. Look, at these guys have been hanging around. Look, that's why we're not going to – we're just going to have to tolerate them for a while. Everybody put them on ignore. I think you can right-click them, can't you? And have
nope,
them put on a door?
Doesn't work. Does not work.
No, if you right-click on where they're at on the the text area, the little, what do they call it, the computer, right-click on that, I think you can ignore them there.
No, it doesn't do anything.
Okay, that's one of the downsides of talk show, and that's why we're going to leave this place.
There's no control here at all.
No. And you'll always have children. They have nothing else to do. This is their kicks. They come here on every night. If they're not in our room, they're in someone else's room. And shame on us talk show that they haven't provided a way to prevent that. You know, what can you do? So that's why we're not going to be here long. And
well, I think it used to work, and I think it's not working now. And I think talk show's got a problem, or somebody on the inside is letting them come in here where we can't click ignore. And I don't know why you couldn't kick them out. That's baloney, but...
Yeah, I can't find a way to do anything with it. So, but anyway, let's just ignore them. That's all. You know, there's nothing else we could do. Children are children, and they have nothing else to do. This is their life. They live for this. This is really what they live for, believe it or not. This is their evening enjoyment. But, all right, who's next? Let's see... Before Jesse's been on, so let me go to Daryl before I go to Jesse. Let me see who else hasn't been on yet. So, Daryl from what's that, Missouri or Montana? That's Montana, right? M-O is Montana?
Missouri.
Missouri. Okay. Missouri.
Just remember, K.C. Moe.
Okay. Go ahead, Darryl.
You were talking earlier about the number of people on the jury for the grand jury. I would like to remind you that in some areas, like out here in Missouri, Kansas, areas like Montana, a county is made up of, the whole county might be made up of as few as a couple thousand people.
Right.
And when you're talking about getting especially 24 people together to sit on a jury, you might have some of them coming in from 100 miles away. So that becomes quite a problem.
Well, I'll tell you what. Look, let's go to common sense on this thing. And if it really gets to the point that you can't get more the 25, you got to at least meet the 12. But I try to at least meet 16 or 17 because you may lose a few people. But also, this idea that people get $30 to cover their expenses, that doesn't work in our society no more. If people are going to travel, they have to be paid for that traveling. And maybe, look, you can't travel 100 miles a day to sit. They're going to have to be able to pay for them to stay someplace overnight if they're willing to do that, and so on and so forth. We need to really pay people their losses. You know, they have a family to take care of. They got rent to pay. And if they're sitting on a jury for a week, that may be a hardship for some people. And so we're going to have to figure that out ourselves, to be honest with you. And I think we have to write it up, and we have to, once we get our counties in order and get our state in order, we can also even get a little counsel from the people who have been elected for different positions, just to get their opinion. Not that they're going to make the decision on it, because ultimately I think this is a people's decision. We're going to put in the budget, and we're going to save huge amounts of money also. Remember, especially a county that's got only a few thousand in them, there's not going to be that much crime going on. They may only have to have a grand jury come together once in a blue moon, you know? So it shouldn't be that serious a problem. The other thing ultimately is we got to figure out a new process of paying these people and make sure that they are able to pay their bills. We can, and also no grand jury should sit longer than a week. You turn the grand jury over, and a week might be, you know, 2 days this week and another day next week, and maybe the later towards the end of the month you come in for another day. You know, they shouldn't have to, whatever it is. If one case is that big, then that's all they should deal with, is that one case. But if they can deal with a whole bunch of cases, fine, then they'll deal with a whole bunch of cases. But they shouldn't have to sit in longer than 5 days or so. And the trial jury is usually only a day or two or three. You know, they're not usually long anyway. But there are cases where you might have a case that might go 3 or 4 weeks. So, but I think a case like that, it's going to be known ahead of time. I think a lot of those cases are going to be thwarted out, because I think we're going to be able to fix that on the grand. I think the grand jury is going to solve a lot of problems of people going into trial. Because remember, we can negotiate the situation, we can arbitrate it. The other thing is there's a lot of things that are not crimes. We're not going to be dealing with it. So there's going to be 80% of the cases that are coming up are victimless crimes. They're not going to come up anymore. So we're not going to waste the people's time and money with that either. Additionally, we'll be more efficient, and we're not lawyers, so we will be able to do this much more efficiently. So we're going to save money again. Additionally, also, we're going to work to get rid of all lawyers. Look, there should be no lawyers, no hired lawyers to represent people who are our servants. What do they need a lawyer for? They got the people. If they have a question, they can come ask. We'll tell them what to do. Why do they have to go see a lawyer? And if they're going to see a lawyer to deal with somebody for some reason, well, you can't. They have a duty to speak to the people. They don't need lawyers, and we certainly don't want our legislators having lawyers, because we we elect these people to go to Congress to do things, and lawyers are writing all these laws, and these people are lawyers, but people who aren't even elected lawyers, they have a bunch of lawyers will come in and advise and write the papers. It's insane. Lawyers got to go. That's the New World Order. That's they're a communist system to begin with, and we don't need them. So we'll save bundles of money there too. So we'll be able, I think it's right to pay the people for whatever it is that their time is taken away from them, both traveling fees plus whatever it is that they need to continue to pay their bills. And if they need to stay because they're traveling a long distance, we put them up in a decent hotel for the term that they're there for, and that's that. And that's not too much, too often, because I don't think you got a lot of counties that have that kind of a problem. But where it exists, it should be dealt with. It's just logical. Take care of it, you know? So you guys will figure it out there. That's the point.
I agree.
I just gave you a whole bunch of ideas, and I'm sure you got a lot of ideas, and other people have ideas. And just do the right thing and don't let anyone suffer. It's that simple.
Right. And that's one of the reasons a lot of people turn down sitting on a jury is because they lose money.
That's right. I understand that. Sure. When I was a businessman, I was always concerned. They never called me anyway. But I was always concerned that I wouldn't be able to do it. I got business going on. You know?
Absolutely. Well,
anything
that
else,
was really
Tom?
All I wanted to address. And you covered it just the way I was hoping. So thank you. I appreciate your input. Keep up
okay,
the good work, John. You too, Gerard.
Well, we appreciate everybody that's in this with us doing what has to be done. So, let me see who's next now. I'm going to go to the numbers now. We got 2-5. Jersey is number one. So let's take Jersey number one. Go right ahead again, Jersey. North New Jersey, you got the mic. All right, while we're waiting for New Jersey, let's go to East Virginia. I'll leave New Jersey open. East Virginia, go right ahead.
Hi, John. Jim Cook again.
How you doing, Jim?
Oh, so far so good. Well, I've got a couple of statements I want to make. You were talking earlier about non-denominational and about Christ. You know, I've had this discussion with other Christians before. They go, oh, well, you know something, we're not under the law, you know. And I go, okay, that's fine. Then what are you under? And they say, grace. I says, okay, now what is grace? And they say, well, when we sin, we ask God or Jesus for forgiveness because he's the way to God, and therefore he forgives us, and therefore we're under the grace. And I goes, okay, that's good. I said, but if you don't know the law, how do you know how to ask for forgiveness? And when you've broken the law, how do you know that if you don't know the law, you've broken it to ask for forgiveness for? And then I say, well, you know, God said this. He said, whosoever loves the law loves God. And our Constitution and our Bill of Rights and our laws in this country were originally based on that. I'm not talking about code. I'm talking about law.
Right, so and laws, and God said very clearly, he wrote it in the hearts of all men. We all know it. So we all, when we hit it, we know it. We agree.
That's right. That's right. You're absolutely correct. Now, the other thing I wanted to address is you said, well, you know, we want to keep this thing undenominational, which is true, because this is a forum for talking about law. But you also got to say, well, you know, law was originated from the Bible. So, you know, and you hit it on the head before when you said, if we love God and we know God and we want to obey God, all the laws originated from God. So how can anybody, being anything other than a Christian, expect justice? As a matter of fact, if you take a look at the courts today, you don't get justice in those courts. You try to bring up the Constitution in those courts and they slam you right down. And they're
right,
because
they got the mind of man instead of the mind of God. That's
absolutely.
Why.
Absolutely. So being a person who seeks God or being an agnostic. You know, one thing, I've gone through the gambit of looking at religions, and I've gone from being a Catholic to being an atheist to being a mystery religion person that's studying Zen Buddhism, and when I got into karate, and it led me all the way 360 degrees back to God. Because one person said to me, he says, you know something? He says, why are you into all this mystery religion and stuff? And I said, well, because I want to understand the truths of God and to be able to see the future, you know, how the mystery religions do that. And this guy said to me, well, I know a book that where all the predictions in it came true. And I goes, oh, really? And what's that? And he goes, the Bible. So he hit me with that, and square between the eyes, and I realized what he was saying, and I began to look at the mysteries of the Bible. Now, that being said, God also said this one thing. He says, you deny me in front of other men, I will deny you in front of God. And we are supposed to go out as preachers and to preach to the whole world. And if a person doesn't want to hear it, that doesn't mean you don't have to talk to them about it. It just means that if you deny God before that person, who's more important, that person or God? So you got to make your choice, because if you decide to deny him or not to speak of him in front of other men, then you're condemned. Mm-hmm. Like Jesus said, you deny me in front of other men, and I will deny you in front of my Father. So we've got an obligation. And basically, what it really gets down to, the crux and the meat of the matter, is that you're out to save that person's soul. It's like he's standing in the middle of the road, a bus is coming, and he doesn't know the bus is coming. He's oblivious to it. So it is our duty and our job to deliver the message to him. And no seed planted goes unfertile. In the Word of God.
Well, this is all true. You know, I agree with you. You know, and the bottom line, I think, really is, you know, do the right thing and be a good example, and people will see there's something about you. And when they ask, you tell them. It's that simple. The best way to acknowledge God and the best way to share Him is just through your actions, trying to be honorable, trying to be merciful, trying to be patient, trying to be understanding. Because people see those things and they wonder sometimes why are you that way? Because most people haven't come to that point, and that's where we all should be striving anyway. And
right.
Just the actions between ourselves, how we treat individuals, and
absolutely.
That will reflect. That will reflect the God
now,
of the universe.
Now to get past the religious stuff, I've got another question for you, and this is what I feel is most important. With all the code out there and the fact that we are not under the code unless we enter into a licensed agreement or an agreement, a contractual agreement.
Right,
with
contract, yeah.
Yeah. Then here's what I'm thinking. Now, when we go into these courts, or people have gone into these courts without realizing this code and contract and the whole nine yards, they're getting ripped off by these courts, hundreds of thousands of dollars sometimes millions of dollars. Now, isn't the biggest perpetrator of all the crime of these judges and these, without knowing it, these juries who are taking instruction from these judges and these clerks of court and these officers of the court and deputies of the court? So when you're going with the grand juries, isn't it the grand jury's job to reverse the damage that they've done with the court system? Is that what we're really looking at, naming at here?
Well, exactly, and we could do that to the best of our ability. Remember, we could never – restitution to all the damage they've done, it's not possible. Okay, they've killed people. They've sent people to jail for huge amounts of time. They've destroyed families. In the probate court, they destroy families at the end of the life. And in people's twilight years, they destroy their last days to be able to spend with their children and to be able to take what they've earned in their lifetime to give to their children. Probate courts is nothing but the mafia coming in to take everything away from these people and destroying their last days in this world and destroying the family at the end, at least for that person's case, at the end. And family courts do the same thing from the beginning. You know, children grow up with our fathers because of these SOB judges, because they... It's so horrible. I know way too many stories, and it's hard to keep them. You know, it really disturbs me. Okay, and we have to fix all that. That is exactly why the pain and the suffering that these judges have put onto people. Okay, and they do it for filthy lucre's sake, for money. That's what they do it for, and that's why I say jail belongs to only two types of people. Violent people and judges, and I truly believe that. I mean that. I'm going to fight in every case I can when it's necessary. This guy's got to go to jail. Why? Because he's put so much suffering on so many people. He needs to know what that is. He doesn't have enough money. We're finding out the judges in New York don't have bonds, so there's no money there. Okay, you go to the and all these judges have damaged so many people. There's so many damage. So many things are going to come. How are you going to pay these people? You can't. You know, we can salvage what we can out of the CAFA funds, but that's a big bubble. That's going to burst. As soon as we start doing that, that's going to burst anyway. It's going to quicken the burst, okay? So we won't get much out of that. The bottom line on a lot of things is people are not going to get restitution, but you know what? What they'll get is they'll get liberty back. They'll get some relief in that sense. We'll get our republic back, and we'll just go on. Then the best we can, but we will try to salvage whatever we can to pay restitution to all the damage of all the... I've been damaged, but I don't need to be paid back. My damage is a minimum compared to some of these people that have suffered. Literally, children have grown up without parents because of these people, And parents of people have died unable to see their children because they've taken fiduciary control of these people. They've taken their entire worth of their life, $500,000 empire, $750,000, $250,000, even $100,000, and they take that money away from them and from the family. This is a horror story. And that's why I tell you, when I got into the courts and started to see what's really going on, I have not found any goodness anywhere. I haven't found there was one judge, but I only saw one case that he talked about. He seemed like he was a pretty good guy, but I don't know. Look, I doubt it anyway, because he's pre-approved by the bar. Look, I see nothing but evil. It's a horror story. For anybody who has not been in the courts and don't understand, this is a horror story at every level. And when the day comes that you have to deal with the courts, if we don't fix it, you're going to see that horror story. And a lot of people are seeing it, you know, for the first time. They're 40, 50 years old, 30 years old. They end up in court and they say, whoa, wait a second. I thought there was justice. No, there is no justice there. There's injustice. These people are ugly. They're horrible.
Now here's a big question. If a judge does somebody wrong and it's been over 7 years or whatever the statute of limitation is.
No statutes in common law. There's no statute of limitations for anything.
That's
if
good.
If you can get the evidence and bring it up, you can deal with it. You can take it to court. The problem with old cases is you know, memory is lost, the evidence is lost, and you can't prove it, so you may not win.
Here's something, okay? First of all, the restraining order is unconstitutional because they can, one, violate your Fourth Amendment, okay, and second, take away your guns, especially in a marital situation, even though no damage was done, okay, and on either, well, on one party at least. But the bottom line here is that how can they serve you with a restraining order when, first of all, it violates two constitutional rights and violates two federal laws, 18 U.S.C. 241 and 18 U.S.C. 242, conspiracy against rights and conspiracy against rights under colorable law. So
right.
Tell me, if that's the case, then we can actually go after a judge in the police department for their actions and aiding and abetting the actions of a judge for carrying out if you go to the 16th Jurisprudence 256, it specifically states, any law that is passed that violates the Constitution is null and void from the time it is
Its inception, yep.
Yeah, not from the date it is adjudicated in the case of law, and no judge has to adjudicate it, no law officer has to apply that law. So they're all culpable when it comes to restraining orders because they figure, oh, well, we got to do something. Well, oh, yeah, okay, you do something, and you can go to federal prison, period.
Mm-hmm. So, well, again, you know, again.
No, I was just thinking, so in that case, if there is no statute of limitation, then I know a place where I can...
Right, there is no statute of limitations, but remember one thing. You can't restore the damages done to people in probate courts. They've already lost their parents and have suffered, and their parents have gone, and you can't restore those people. You can't restore the children that have been separated from their parents or at least even separated from one parent. You know, there's nothing more damaging than for a child to grow up without a father. And the same thing without a mother, okay? They need both. That's the way it was put together. But these people go in there and separate these people. They give everyone a lawyer, and it becomes a statutory game, and it's all about making money, and you're in the game until your children turn 18. Okay, everybody's in court, and they keep that separation going. You can't restore these people. You can't take the psychological damages away from them. You can't take the loss of a father and not having a relationship with a father. You can't restore that. There's not enough money on the planet to restore that. Okay, so, you know, that's why I say judges deserve jail. Okay, you know, in New York, in the Constitution, it makes it clear that the family courts have extra leeway because they're dealing with human beings, they're dealing with family. And these bastards took it to put more control and took away everything, and it's just so destructive. They went the opposite way. You know, what it really means is keep the damn lawyers out of the room, and let's sit down and bring these people together and try to find out how we can work things out so this child isn't injured, okay? Because that's what it's all about. But they don't do that. We shouldn't even talk about it because I'm getting angry. So
yeah, I don't blame you. And I was thinking of a case. I talked to a guy up in Oregon who wrote the pamphlet Sue Juris, and the state came in and accused him of molesting his daughter, which never happened. And then
They pull on all these people, every single one of them. Look at. We shouldn't talk about this no more. I think we should move on. They do this to everybody. That's their card all day long. That's why I say, and I will fight to the hilt, when these things come before me, as far as on the grand jury, and I do the investigation, I am going to push for jail. These guys got to go to jail. That's the only way you can deal with this. They need to understand what they've done. You can't restore the individual. We could do the best we can as a people, as a whole, to try to help these people that were destroyed so severely by the system. But certainly they don't have the bonds, and we could take their money away. We could take everything away from them. The judges do usually have a lot of money. We could take all that and give it to them. But just think about it. You have one judge who's damaged and injured hundreds, perhaps thousands of people. There is one judge that retired. Gerard was telling me about it. He read somewhere or something where one judge retired. He was boasting on how in his career he gave over 1 million years of jail time. Who are these people? They certainly don't come from planet Earth. I don't know. We should move on, though.
Yeah,
it's a very painful discussion.
I agree. Okay, thanks, John.
All right. Okay, let's see who's next here. Number one, Jesse from PA. Go right ahead.
Okay. Hi, John. Yeah, I'll go on to the next important question. And
okay.
I have a statewide call-in that happens every other Tuesday, and so I got the questions from other people, and I decided to ask on the national call-in, as I didn't have answers. There was a suggestion, and I didn't think it was very, that I was kind of saying that we should put our resources towards the national site, but there was a suggestion I thought I'd bring it up, was to create a state website, and that it would take each county, because I guess they talk to a developer, to give $100 to develop the site, and then $50 a month per county for maintenance. And I suggested mm-hmm. that we give the resources that we can to your site, the national site, our site. Which, what is your thought?
Well, you know, what we're building on the new site, remember, united we stand, divided we fall.
Right.
The key thing to National Liberty Alliance is the keen awareness and concern of a top-down structure. And if anybody ever sees it becoming a top-down structure, they can come right here in this room and reveal it, and people should leave then, because we've been taken over. And so we're trying to create things in such a way that that cannot happen. And we have a lot of ideas and mechanisms that we're going to be putting in place. First and foremost, you know, we do need to talk on a national level. We're going to create a chat room. We thought of creating 50 chat rooms, one for each state, but we shouldn't do that. First of all, I don't think we'll have enough people, at least not in the beginning. Maybe later on that'll develop to that. I don't know. Maybe there'll be a necessity in the future for that. But what we can have is a national chat room, and we have enough people to maintain that to keep it open 24/7. So we have chat in the chat room that you'll have at any time you want. You can go in the chat room and probably find some people in there. Now, we're also going to do a bulletin board or a message board. And that's sort of like the meetup setups, you know, where you can go out and put a message up, and you can pick a category, you can create a category, you put a subject matter up, and then someone can come up and comment on it, and you can click follow this, and you'll get an email telling you that someone put a new message up there, and you can come back out, and you can get a discussion going that way. And that doesn't annoy a lot of people, you know, with all these emails, but you can get private conversations, and you can get a lot of people involved in that. So we're going to set that up for each state. Each state will have that. Each state will have a place where they can upload certain documents. Each state has one representative. That's the state coordinator. You can change them as often as you want. You can have them have terms, whatever you want to do. That's up to the state. But that person will have authority on the site. They will be able to go to the national chat room and have the ability to remove certain rights of a person. In other words, if a person is really being obnoxious, and we've got to think about what is the meaning of obnoxious. Obviously, if they're being foul, that's obvious, you know. But if they're being really obnoxious, or if they're foul, any of the 50 people, you know, that might be in that chat room, any of the 50 coordinators, state coordinators, they'll be administrators on the website. They'll have the ability to take away the privilege of that person being able to post anywhere on the site. And in order for them to get that back, they would have to go back, talk to the person who took the privilege away, and they'd have to agree to behave themselves, and you'd want to give them maybe one chance or maybe two. And, look, I don't know about a second chance after that. And people will have to figure that out themselves. But at some point, then they're not going to have the ability to post anything. At some point, and if they don't like it, eventually they'll leave. Maybe we just don't want that person around anyway. That's probably not the right kind of person that needs to be amongst us. So, but anyway, that will be there on the site. There'll be other things. There'll be each state will have its own category, its own area where certain functions will be able to take place. So it's just like a website, and there'll be certain abilities as we build and add more modules. There'll be a lot more things added onto this. So you can come onto the site and focus in on your state and within your county, so you can come in, you can get onto the national level of things, and you can get the education, which is everywhere. It's the whole thing. It works for every state. You'll be able to get your own state constitution and election law and different things and how the committee, because we're going to get back to the political process, too, at a later date. Not the politics, just the political process with the committeemen, and another thing that the people have power in and they need to get involved with to take that authority. And so I would try to deter and suggest don't go create another website. Work with this. If this doesn't work for you, you can just pull out and go somewhere else. But remember, we have to come together on a national level too, not just on our county levels. You know, the county level, everything, the real work is being done on the county level. That's where the rubber hits the road. That's where the real decision-making is going. But as far as communicating and organizing, And from time to time, you'll need to work on a state level, and you need to work with other counties to do that. And there'll be probably a few occasions that we're going to have to work on a national level. You know, we go after someone like Monsanto. We're going to want to work that on a national level. There's a lot of things going on. There are people that are compiling evidence for certain things. We're not going to get into these discussions now, but everybody understands. They have an idea what I'm talking about. And they're going to bring, they've been compiling evidence for a long time. They've been involved fighting this stuff and trying to change these things, and it's not going anywhere because these people are evil. But they've collected all this evidence, and when we get to a certain point, they're going to say, hey, I could take this to the grand jury, and they're going to listen to me. And if it's something that is a national injury, and believe me, there's a lot of national injuries out there. Just think about the air up there and your water and your food, okay? There's a lot of national problems out there. So we have to come together on a national level at some point. When someone brings that to us, we need to look at that from a national view. Only a few situations like that. I think mostly really have to be done on a county and state level. But there are some national things. So yeah, we also don't want to get lost. We can help each other, state to state, county to county. We don't want to lose our way again, and so we want to memorialize a lot of things so that we'll never lose our way again. One of the biggest problems we have, and we're going to spend one evening in the near future, again, we got so many subject matters. I started listing out things, and I want to try to cover something educational-wise towards what we're doing here for at least 20 minutes or a half hour each Monday, and really focusing in on something, like understanding the structure of what we're putting together, understanding the state plan that we're proposing, the national plan that we're proposing. All that's up for discussion and to tweak it, but at least lay these things out. Misinformation is an important thing. We really have to talk about misinformation. No matter all the sites that I've ever visited, all the information I've ever gotten from every place I've gone to, I find misinformation on every single site. People with strong understanding of common law, and I find that they have these pieces of misinformation nudged in here and nudged in there. And so how do we get rid of this? And we all have the problem, so we need to really work on this. This is a situation we have to work on, especially with the grand jury. We cannot go forward with misinformation. We have to expose it at its roots. And I'm telling you, everything we're doing here at National Liberty, not that we're not perfect, and we've made mistakes, we corrected our mistakes, and we will continue to do that, but we research everything. We don't run with the provost marshals. A lot of people are running with provost marshals, for instance. We don't run with the idea of a provost marshal because it's got a lot of good ideas to it, and I've listened to that. But when I did my research, I found something different. Same thing with the border review. You know, the border review is something that we want to consider and look at because the grand jury can set forth a border review. We can do a border review from a national level, and that board of review goes out and does all of the investigation and the research. There'll be maybe specialists among them, forensic kind of people, maybe economically or some other way, and they'd be much more able to do a job by looking into certain things, and then be able to come back and put it into terms and words that the common person can understand to see. But the Board of Review in itself can't be the high level because it's an administrative process. It doesn't have any findings or development in common law whatsoever. But it can be used by common law. I see it as a great tool. But again, there's a lot of misinformation. So we got to talk about those things, and we got to work these things out. So anyway, my strong suggestion is to stay with National Liberty Alliance and develop an area here which will start give a lot of tools and a lot of power and a lot of authority to each of the states, and they'll be able to do things. And on a national level, we'll work collectively. 50 people will watch what's going on. We'll elect one person on a national level who will oversee everything, and we'll change that person every so often. We will not permit a top-down organization to come out of what we're doing here. And we'll talk about it from time to time to keep ourselves straight and on a narrow path.
Yeah, I thought from the standpoint of creating a unified front that we wouldn't want to you know, create our own website and you know, because like I know you guys do a lot of research on what you're doing, and unless we know exactly what we're doing, we don't want to deviate too far. And,
right. That doesn't mean you don't want to do Facebook. Facebook is good. Even meetups. Meetups are great. I like meetups.
Yeah.
Meetups are great for local stuff. Every county should have a meetup page.
Okay. Well, we have a statewide meetup page, but I'll suggest
that. Yeah, there you go. You could start with that.
Yeah, Veronica from Lackawanna County was nice enough to set the meetup page up for the state.
And meetups are great. Meetups pretty good because they got all the tools you really, really need. And
yeah,
what's nice, it brings you to the calendar is fantastic, you know. And
Pennsylvania meetup.
Yeah, so I mean, that's where you should be because that brings you physically connected.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've been trying to promote it, but there's only 5 people that are signed up on the site in Pennsylvania, and there's 70-some people as organizers, and I know in Butler County alone there's more than 5 people, so I'm hoping that everybody will start using the meetup to post things and, you know, just have a common place for all of us to
Yeah, well, that'll grow in time also. Remember, you know, look, we're here to do a job, and the job is to find at minimum one to four people for every county in order to establish grand juries in every county and then work together collectively to win back our republic by dealing with our local courts. And you're going to have to start to become close-knit. And once you start to become close-knit, if we can't give all the necessities here on National Liberty Alliance that is necessary for a state in order to really communicate well, you can do meetup. You can, and you may want to do it anyway, even with what we have and Facebook and any other place. But look at if we will continue to grow and add things to make it rich. When we come up with the new site, you're going to be able to come onto any page, and at the bottom, like you'll be able to leave comments, and those will, you know, the latest comment will be the first comment, and there'll be a lot of interactiveness. Our website for our meetings are going to be through our own, live chat room. Instead of looking at the chat room here in TalkShoe, it's going to be on our website. We'll have control, and we'll have plenty of people with the power to deal with problematic people. First of all, you know, visitors can come and watch, but they can't participate unless they register. So, and if they register, we know who they are, and we can red dot them, so to speak. We can prevent them from, we know exactly who they are. And people who do these childish things, they don't want us to know who they are anyway, because they know they're childish things. But the thing is that we're going to have be working off of Blog Talk Radio, okay, which will have call-in phone numbers. So anybody who wants to come in and call in phone number can call it. Most people seem to like the text chat. They can hear what's going on. They can text chat. We can control the problems. People can come in and out of the phone call. Some people can stay on the phone call to listen because they didn't come in the chat room. Maybe they travel, whatever the case may be. So it's going to be very interactive. And we're setting up a calendar system set up there. We're looking into a program where we can kind of embed 3 meeting rooms. And you can go onto the calendar and claim I need the meeting room on Wednesday from 7 to 9 or whatever it is. And so you write it up on the calendar, and you can have an online discussion with private discussion in a private meeting room for the purpose of, dealing with grand jury things maybe or whatever the case may be or whatever. So we're going to develop all those things. That one may take a little while, maybe a month or two in, but we will get to that meeting room set up also, because everybody's looking for a meeting where the state can come together or the counties can come together. Anybody be able to go and sign up. And if 3 meeting rooms isn't enough, we'll embed a 4th one and so on. So we want to make this a very rich site, and we have a lot of RSS feeds going to be on our site. The amount of information is nothing compared to what we're going to be setting up on the new site. Of course, we have all the documents and everything. We have more documents that I don't think we even have on this site that we're going to be putting in the other. We probably have 10 times more video to put on to our, at least 10 times easily, I think. We got a lot of video to put up. And all of it is educational and courses, different courses. We have a lot of RSS feeds. We have for what's going on in the administrative office in Washington. what's happening there. Congressional RSS feeds. We have senatorial RSS feeds. We'll have news feeds from certain areas. We're also going to invite bloggers. We want bloggers to come out from us. You know, someone who wants to be a blogger. We'll give them a place, and they're going to do blogs. Maybe they have a website. They're doing a blog already. We'll do an RSS feed through their website. So we'll have bloggers. And we're going to just continue to get rich in these things. When we move on to the political side of things, there's a lot of stuff we want to feed people in. You know, look, when you go to vote for someone, you know, people don't even know what these people do. You should be able to click on that office and see what their responsibilities are. What is it that these people do that's holding this office? Do these people that you're electing, do they appoint commissioners or appoint people? And so you should know everything about a person's office. We're totally ignorant to those things. We want to set up a system. You know, it's going to become very sophisticated on the political side so we can have educated voters. You know, the committee men should not be going out putting signs up to support people. No, they should be putting signs up telling people, hey, go vote. You want to learn about the person, go to the website. When you go to and you click on a particular, you know, you put in where you're from, and it'll tell you who's running for office, what the offices they're running for, and it'll tell you what their jobs are. They'll all have maybe a 500-word a paper that they write about themselves, and if you want more information at the end, they give you the link to their website. Committee men shouldn't be supporting these people. They should be just looking for decent people to run for office and supporting the decent people, but not support anyone to vote for anybody. That you work out and figure out yourself. At some point, I'd like to see the party names disappear. Maybe America can become mature enough and go to Washington's vision, where there is no Republican, there is no Democrat, it's just people. Okay? I don't know if we can get to that point. Maybe in the future we can. Maybe National Liberty Alliance might be that platform to be able to spearhead that movement and to launch it. But again, we have to become more mature as a people. We're not ready for that. We're all infants in a sense because we're really dumb. Yet we have a lot of past to look at. We see the destruction and what these people have done. We've seen the mistakes. And we can refresh ourselves in education and do it the right way and educate our children, and then they can take it to the next step maybe. But anyway, you know, I have a lot of visions for National Liberty Alliance, and it's to unite the people and to keep them free and keep them educated and not forget our past. And there are a lot of people working to support these things and to work with these things. So, you know, this is where I'd like to see everything go.
Just real quick, there was a lady named Liz that called me and asked for my email address. She said she was doing this for you. Is that right?
Yeah, Elizabeth is okay. Putting together a thing for, there's a thing called VC program, which looks pretty interesting. We're trying to get, I got to get a meeting going with all 50, which we only have 31 right now, so we lack 19. But I'd like to get some meetings going from time to time with 50 coordinators. And I don't think we'll spend a lot of time, but I think we have a lot to talk about, ideas to bring about, things to, you know, to just organize. Really, for me, I'd like to organize for the sole purpose. You know, I realize if you're not talking to people, unfortunately, we all have the same problem. We end up to be the lumps on the log, and we got to get rid of the lumps. We've got to keep moving. You know, here in New York, we've got 21 counties, and we haven't elected another one in quite some time. And I haven't been focusing my attention in at least 4 weeks at all. I really keep trying to find the time to get back because I got to go push the people in the water. I got to get them going. But then we have the national side, and I know I got to push those people in the water. And if we're talking, then you're talking. So if I'm talking with the state leaders and you're talking with me, then we're all talking with our county leaders and they're talking with each other, and that's what it is. This is what it's about. We got to be talking to each other, you know. We also want to do things which we touched on a little bit on the radios, you know, the shortwave radios. In case of an emergency, we need to be able to continue our communications at least on emergency levels and giving people information on what's going on the other side of the country, you know. And however we can work with those problems when those problems come up, whatever they may be. So, but, yeah, she's kind of putting things together. We're going to try BC a little bit, but I think there's going to be this new program we'll eventually pull in. It'll take place, but we'll use the BC. So she's working under my direction to try to get everyone organized, get them into the BC program, educate them a little bit, and then we're going to try to have a meeting with her.
Yeah, she sounded like a very nice lady. I thought she was.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that that was the way it was. And I wanted to let you know I do have BC set up too. I put everybody that was in my mailing list on my BC page. So I do have BC set up, when that time comes. Another quick question, if I can, or do you want me to put my hand back up?
Well, go ahead. Finish off and we'll move.
Okay. I was asked by another person in the state, who will contact the registered jurists to sit on a county grand jury? And I said my best guess would be the foreman. But I said I'd ask
there is no foreman. The foreman is decided on once they're pulled together, and we will try not to ever be the foreman. Well, a few times in the beginning, until we straighten out our counties, we're going to end up being foremen. And we'll share that foremanship. You know, in one case, you'll be the foreman. In the next case, he'll be the foreman or she'll be the foreman. But we'll just rotate it. But we're not going to spend too much time on being foremen because we're busy really doing the moving and the shaking and investigating and the bringing it before the grand jury and orientating people and talking to people who have problems and solving problems. A lot of problems to be able to solve on the phone. As far as the registry goes, the first order, when we need a particular grand jury or we need a trial jury, we'll go to the registry first. And we may not have that many people on the registry, and that will build as time goes on. But once we exhaust through that registry, then we go right into the election registry, and we use that to get to people for the grand jury and the trial jury. And some people will want to be called more often than others, so we will call them more often than others.
Who will do the calling, though?
Oh, that's the job. That's the job of the coordinators, administrators, the four administrators for each county. You might discover four people is not enough. Four people is the beginning. Four people is minimum. Even if there's not enough work for the four people, you need a minimum of four people. You have to have four people.
Have those four people.
Oh no! You can only have one person in file. You want to get control of your county, the courthouse, and bring them back under common law. Get in control of the prosecutor and talk with the sheriff and befriend him and get things moving. Even if you're one person, you'll find other people may be able to give you part-time help in these things. And so you use whatever resources you have in people, but you are looking for four people who are looking to really get involved with an interesting job that really helps control our future and something, you work in this through your life, the end of your life, you feel like you accomplished something, a really good job. You'll be paid for it. I find it exciting to some degree. You'll find but you have to be someone willing to be educated. If they're not willing to be educated, then, that person's not qualified then. A qualified person is a person who's beginning their education and continues their education. And, in life, I'm always educating myself. I've educated myself in many, many fields. And I'll never stop because I find enjoyment in learning different things and mastering them.
Yeah, definitely. Learn something new every day.
Yeah. But people have got to really bone up really good on these things. They should be reading. They should be listening. We got a lot of stuff in audio. So, you don't have to sit down and read trial by jury. That's 300 and some odd pages. You can put on the audio. It's 15 hours in audio. Put the audio on. Listen to it a couple of times. We've got lectures, common law lectures. We've got hours on end of that. We've got so much stuff on audio. We've got a lot of video. We've got constitutional stuff in video. We have American history in video. We have so much video that you haven't even seen half of what we really got. It's going to be up on the new site. It's just going to be a lot of stuff.
I think at some point we should make a syllabus or something or somehow so you don't get lost
and stymied by overwhelming information and not knowing which
right.
where to start.
Yeah, we've laid it out with, I think, eight or nine major tabs up on top, and they're categorized pretty well. And when you click on one of those tabs and drop down all the sub menus for them, and we may even have sub menus, but I don't think we'll get that far into that. But we'll have sub menus, and one page that'll be the most important page, which will not show up unless you're signed in. There's three tabs that will not show up. I think there'll be three tabs. You know, we haven't completely been sure on this yet, but there are three tabs that people, when they visit the site, they will not see, unless they decide to register. And one of those tabs is called Jurist. Okay, and on that tab, it starts off first page down, or the first link below it will be Introduction, which will be explaining to you, you know, what it is and the process of learning and how to approach this. And it'll be literally all, I think we've got 15 pages at this point, or I think it's 15 pages, that will be linked underneath that one tab, Jurist, and that's your homework. That's your study. If you can get through all that stuff, you got it. You got it all. Okay. Of course, there's a lot of other stuff that you'll be investigating and looking at in the political realms, and some other things that may not be there. There's issues of today. Lots of video and there's books, reading. We've got I don't even know how many books we have up there that are PDF books. You know, and so there's a lot of other stuff too. But the key thing is, if you want to follow a breadcrumb trail, we're putting a breadcrumb trail to make it very easy for people. This is where they want to spend most of their time if they want to really bone up on being a jurist, and more than being a jurist, being the investigators of the process, being the administrators, knowing history, American history, knowing a common law, knowing the procedures of the court, and you know that's all going to be in that one category. And also the top bar will follow as you roll the page. That top bar will continue to follow down, so you'll always be able to navigate the site by clicking back and getting to where you came from or seeing what's available at all times. So we're trying to make it so it's easy to navigate and logical. But you got to spend a little time on it and looking at things. You know, it may take a little while before you see the logic, but anybody who spends just a little time with it, you will all of a sudden, it'll see the logic. And we'll have as many introduction pages as possible.
So we'll be able to get the complete education right on the site.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Much, much more than you're even asking for is going to be available.
And then to go back over it again, because the first time you see it, you won't remember everything. You'll get something new every time you watch it.
Right. It'll always be there. Exactly.
Okay. And let's see. One other. Okay, I got an answer to that. This, I was going to say a question, because you were saying about not needing to pay for things. The transcripts, should they also be free when you go to ask for them? Because they want an exorbitant amount of money, and that's the only way that you can really hold people accountable.
Why should we have to pay for any of that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, they're charging.
No, justice shouldn't cost us a dime. If you want to go hire someone to do your justice for you, well, fine, you could do that, but everything else should be free. But ultimately, and some people may just have to because maybe they're not good articulators, maybe they're not good writers. You'll always have people who will need someone to help them. And you know, common law calls them next friends.
Yeah.
Okay?
Well,
and that's a good name for them. They're lawyers.
These transcriptionists that work out of Lancaster, they say they're independent and they're not part of the court, even though they're in the courthouse. And, you know, they say that, you know, they make their money off of selling the transcript. You know,
well, that's true. That is true. But we have to change that.
Yeah, because, I mean,
look,
there's no way you can defend yourself without having the transcript. I mean, especially when you're going to take it to an appellate court.
Look, at those transcripts, those people should be paid a salary by the court, and that's that. Those transcripts should be put onto digital form and created in PDFs that anyone in the court can go and download it and print it out or whatever they want to do with it.
With modern, you know, recording devices and everything, I don't understand why we still need the transcripts. you know, the transcriptionist. I mean, why don't we have
the audio would not be, I don't think we're advanced that enough to, we can get good audio, but remember, it'd be different voices coming from different directions, some higher, some lower, you know, there could be problems with that. So I understand the need for a stenographer. Personally, I think every court case should have both. I think the recording in that room should be turned on, and you still should have the stenographer. And then if there is a question, I can tell you, you know, I had a court case that I appealed for it, and all the important stuff that I needed was the stenographer was writing it inaudible. And it's all the stuff I needed, you know. Back then I was a little naive, so I didn't really realize, and now I know they did that on purpose.
Well, yeah.
Because I was going after the judge. The first case I ever was involved with, I was going after the judge, and I had no knowledge.
Well, a judge can order it to be redacted. I mean, they can actually change the transcript. And that, you know...
that's not going to happen. Right. First of all, the judges are magistrates. They have no judicial powers at all. They have no decision-making powers at all. None. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
They have to look to the king's bench to make sure they're doing the right thing.
Okay. And one comment.
I think we have to. Yeah, that's a problem we have to think about, because I think the stenographer, yeah, stuff is should be free.
One other comment that I just wanted to make, and I'll get off the line, is that I've been talking with a lot of people that work at different levels, you know, in county government and have different jobs within the county government. And I get one common denominator. They all say, I'm just doing my job, and they're cogs in the system. And I keep trying to tell them, relate to them, you know, an idea of, well, you know, there's an executioner, and he's about ready
to
lop somebody's
head off. Let me tell you how to deal with bureaucrats. Look up these codes and stuff that apply to them and carry it with you and keep an extra copy, and you can leave it with them. You know, when we went up and talked today with the clerk, you know, we had things to, you know, right here, right on the paper, silence, you know. Silence can only be equated with fraud. When you have a duty to speak, you have to speak, you know. We didn't hire, and here's the key thing, you always got to remember to bring this up all the time as soon as they bring a lawyer into the game. We didn't hire the lawyer. The lawyer doesn't work for us. You're the bureaucrat. That's what I told the woman today. I said, you're the bureaucrat. You're the one who has been hired. You have a duty to speak to us. You have a duty to answer us honestly. And if you're speaking through a lawyer, you're hiding something, and you don't have that right or authority anyway. Only the people have that right of representation. And I have a right to remain silent as one of the people. But someone who is a bureaucrat, someone who is a servant, they have a duty to speak. They can't be silent about nothing. If they're silent, because they're guilty of something, and we will indict them as if they're guilty then. So that's how you got to deal with them. You got to use the codes. Use their codes. I use codes up against and the rules in federal courts to beat them, and it works a lot better there. I only had one federal case, but it works a lot better up there, I think, because they're more astute and aware. They're more evil though, because they do know everything, I think.
All right. Well, thank you, John. I do appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right. Doug, 1776, Millar. Doug, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Doug Millar here. John, I sure enjoyed listening to you for the first time tonight. And as you know, we had you on that program where Angels Tread last week. And I really appreciate all your input. And so I wanted to throw out an idea here that a man came up with in Las Vegas, and he sold his idea for close to $200 million after he put the website together. He set it up so that people would participate in his organization at a grassroots level regardless of the political party, and they would vote on an issue before it was voted on in Congress, and then the statistics would be turned over to the politicians in Congress and to let them know their constituents' position. And so we really had a participatory republic, and I would hope that someday you have a vision for something like this so we can get people back involved, because so many people are so discouraged. Most people don't even participate in politics anymore because of corruption.
Well, what we want to participate is in the political process, not the politics. The politics is the arguing and the bickering, and I'm going to control you, and you need to do this, therefore we need to make a statute for that, you know, because that's what politics is. Politics is a fight to control the legislators in order to write legislation against your enemy, and all we're doing is putting people deeper and deeper into prison. So we have to get beyond that. We have to get back to the Washington idea. Washington spoke of getting rid of politics and not having politics. If we are successful, and I do believe we're going to be successful in what we're doing here with the grand juries, we're going to strip away all politics, because we're going to prevent legislators from writing legislation that controls the behavior of people. That's not their job. My job is to control my behavior. Your job is to control your behavior. And you can have bad behavior if you want, but when your bad behavior interferes with my kingdom, now we have a problem. Okay, as long as your bad behavior doesn't interfere with my kingdom, we don't have a problem. And so that's the key. And when we get to that point, we now have removed politics. The other thing is that the political process, which the two major parties is the Republican and the Democratic parties. This is where we start off. We've done a lot of research in this, so we have a lot of knowledge of the process and how things really work and how things are supposed to work. And we went back into history. We went up into the archives up there in Albany and went really far back into the political beginnings of things and the original laws and how things were. And what they did is they robbed the people. The name of Republican Party and the Democratic Party belongs to the people, but has been taken over by two private associations. And they've done this by building a facade which appears to have some authority in the parties when they don't have any authority at all. It's a private organization. And it's a top-down structure. And if you go against the party, they throw you out of it. And there's not a damn thing anyone can do about that. But it's all ugly, and it's just trying to control behavior, and it's all ultimately behind it is the New World Order. You know, it's being manipulated. You know, they're controlling the political parties to control our political process, and they're also controlling the Bar Association to control our judicial process. And those are the two major controls. That's the controls of the whole government. That's everything. But we can reinstate the elected committeemen. We can get rid of the side. We can take the names away from those private associations because it's written in election law. It belongs to the people. So when the people elect real committeemen again, those names return, and those private organizations will be forbidden from using those names. So they're going to kind of just disappear. But then it goes back to the people. And the people's job is not to get an individual elected. The people's job is to find qualified, decent, people to put into these positions, okay, and then to educate the people on what their jobs are, what these people that they're going to elect, what their jobs are, and offer them as many choices as possible, decent people. And that's their job. Their job is not to get involved in trying to bring up this position or that position, being conservative positions or liberal positions or this position. No, that's not your job. You see, when you get rid of the politics, all that goes away anyway, because there's no more control, because there's no more writing of legislation of behavior of the other side. And now you have one focus, obedience to the Constitution. And you have a connection to the people, because New York State alone has 16,300 election districts, and each one of those election districts has two committeemen, one Republican and one Democrat. And so they're responsible for 500-600 people combined. So they have access directly to them. And just think of the work we can do and the education we can do working together on that level, bringing the Constitution, giving out booklets, constitutional handbooks, jurist handbooks, getting people involved, telling them about the grand jury, telling them about becoming a committeeman themselves. Sometime in your lifetime, you should put 2 years into it, which is only one day a month, big deal. In 2 years, you spend 24 days. What's the big deal about that, you know? But we're not there to be servants to these politicians to put up their signs and make their battles and do all this other stuff. That's not what we're supposed to be there for. We have a lot of knowledge in this field, and we do have some stuff up there. We're teaching it on the political pages we have. But we're going to become much more involved in that later on once we get through the judicial process and re-empower the people in the political process. Then we'll start educating people there, and now people have total control.
Right. Well, we talk about committee man. In Alaska, we had both a committee man and a committee woman in each precinct, and that seemed to work very well because obviously, you know, we need input of the ladies just as much as we do the men.
Well, remember, you know, ultimately, mankind is male and female. In woman is found man, you know, in the sense of woman, a man with a womb, but it's mankind with a womb. It's the female gender and the male gender, and that's the only real separation. But, yeah, look, if a woman wins it, the position, there's only one position per election district for each party, and hopefully we'll get back to just no parties, you know, at some point in the future. Maybe we can get to that point. America would be arriving if they can get to that point. But we'll see how that goes in the future. But you can't require this is for women and this is for men. And they do that in their party rules. They play that male-female game. And it's just another game they play to sucker you and sucker me and all this other baloney. Look, if two people run for a committee man position, and one's a male and one's a female, well, may the best person win, you know? It is what it is. We can't say 50% have to be women and 50% have to be men. And we had a lot of women involved with us with the committee man process, running for committee man. And, you know, you can't require the sexes to be divided. That's not what we are. And most women don't really want to run for that position anyway. You know, hopefully we're going to get back to our roots where, you know, first of all, a man is the breadwinner and can go out and has the ability to, you know, be able to support their family with one salary and, you know, go back into the early 1900s. That's the way it was. You know, the average salary in the cities were equivalent to $70,000 a year in 2006. And that was the relationship. We were a rich people. The common person is a rich people. You know, you go down to New York City and you see the woodwork that takes place and the amount of space and marble and woodwork that's put in these buildings all over New York City, Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens. They're gorgeous. You walk into these entrances into the apartments, and they have these beautiful entranceways, and that's how the common man lived in the city. You know, that's where, you know, we were a rich people. And we lost all that, and now you need two or three people in a family working to support it. I'd like to see the women going back to more into their roots. Of course, that's their decision. Some women want to have a career. That's good. Let them have it. But a lot of women, I think, still want to go back into the raising of the family, being a homekeeper, and being able to survive as a family unit that way. Children shouldn't go to school till they're about 7 or 8 years old. School should only be 8 years. In 1895, we have a eighth grade test, superior to college level. Superior to college level in 8 years. Why? Because they didn't work on mind control and manipulation, and stunting our education. Instead, they actually worked on giving us a classical education, which isn't in America no more. Your children will have a classical education if you homeschool them and you give it to them, or you send them to a private school. You know, we have a lot to do. We as a people, and we can do it. We just have to step up and do the first thing, and that's save the Republic first. Then we have a lot of other stuff, a lot of challenges we can be working on after that.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. West Oklahoma, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I actually just had a question about really dealing with the FBI right now and how they're casting us as domestic terrorists. And
right. Well, it's not the FBI. Remember that. It's Homeland Security, ultimately. And the FBI has been our friends, although, you know, they've been infiltrated. And I think they lost everything back in the 90s. I mean, they were totally destroyed back then. But I think there's still a lot of the old timers now that are still in there. And hopefully they have a lot of influence on the young kids coming in. And they don't get it on all, but I'm sure they get on some. So if there's any alphabet soup organization that's still with the people, it's the FBI. But, yeah, it's getting to the point where we're going to lose them too. And, yeah, they are used as a weapon against the people. They've come out after us here in New York 3 times to investigate us, and they run away very quickly. They left and didn't bother with us because they knew we weren't doing anything they can get us on, and they had no business investigating, and that they were sent out on a fishing trip, which is unconstitutional. And they understood also that a number of things, we may very well be that grand jury, number one, and number two, they probably, maybe some of them would like to see us to be that grand jury, the people. But also we had knowledge of law, and that could be a problem for them too. So they left us alone very quickly.
When I was doing some research on their website, it actually stated on there that anybody dealing with the common law grand jury was going to be considered domestic terrorist, and that the common law grand jury had no power. How do we do
this? Right, yeah, where was
this
written?
It was on the FBI website. I have the link through my email. I can email that.
Send me that link. Send me that link. I want to see that link. I'm going to go into that. Huh?
The next question is how do we convey to the people that they're saying that we have no power, that we actually do? Because that's a lot of the problem I'm having with
the proof. The proof is in the pudding. They can say all the words they want, but they have nothing to back it up. And when you get them to show them and reveal them that they have nothing, they look pretty dumb. If you go to breaking news, okay, and I got two news paper reports that someone sent me. I want to try to get them posted up. But if you go to breaking news on the top, you have by what authority rebuttal, okay? And we've taken all the positions that these people claim, and we rebutted them here. We have a lot of other things here. We have radio interviews, TV interviews. We have news, newspaper reports here. And, of course, what we've been doing with the indictments and so on. So it's just all the news about what we're doing here, mostly in New York. I got some stuff from out of state, from another state, that we're going to be putting up here. And we may rebut, if there's anything new in that, we may rebut some of that and add it to the rebuttal. But I'm very, very interested in getting the link to that page for the FBI. We need
Absolutely.
To deal with that. And the other thing is we've got some someone sent me a link on Facebook. Facebook has marked us as a potential virus, a potential problem. So anybody clicking on the link, nationallibertyalliance.org, Facebook puts a message out there. As a matter of fact, anybody that has the time that can do some investigation for us on this, we need to get at, I think we need to sue Facebook. And I need somebody that's got the time to do an investigation, find out contacts, find out what's going on, who's responsible in Facebook for doing this, why are they doing this. You know, we have to do a little investigation. But we have to go, these are Nazis. This is a Nazi thing. And this FBI thing, we need to get on that right away. Please send it to me tonight if you can.
Absolutely.
John at nationallibertyalliance.org.
A lot of this, and a lot of us out here, and I'm actually in Colorado. I just happen to have an Oklahoma phone number right now. But a lot of us here in Colorado that are doing the common law grand juries are being threatened when dealing with some of the court clerks or the mayor's office or trying just to obtain information. We're being threatened
right.
with arrest.
Well, that's
and we're
why.
Being
yeah, they can't. what you got to be careful, and this is another problem I wanted to bring up to someone in Pennsylvania on the papers that I got, and we dealt with that problem concerning they ended up opening up a civil suit unwittingly. Also, on top of their paper, they put down county grand jury, Pennsylvania county grand jury, but they didn't put common law. It's extremely important that you put common law. We need to define ourselves. They might be able to come out after us with their statutory courts claiming that we're trying to be their statutory puppet grand juries, and they may be able to get some legal BS with their statutes on that. By putting common law in there, we separate ourselves. We also create the assault upon them, which we have to do. We're assaulting them. Just by your truth assaults the enemy. That's unfortunate. But it is the way it is. But the bottom line is, as soon as we do that, they arch their backs up and they start with an argument, and they already lay out the fact that we're separate from them, and we can use their own words against them. You see, that's what happened in New York, and now they can't say we're claiming to be a court. They can't say we're claiming to be one of their juries, a statutory jury. They can't say any of those things because they've already acknowledged the fact that we're separate from them. That's been done away with. That's not real. And we've also exposed that lie. That's why we did those three-page – in fact, I probably should put that on breaking news too – the three-page rebuttal to the history, the fact of the matter that they claim in New York, which I went through this earlier, but one of the things that was done away with in 1949. And in 1938, they tried to make a move, which they don't talk about that. They lost it, and it was in our Constitution. But as late as 2001, the people here in New York still want the grand jury, and it's in our Constitution, shall never be dissolved, never, okay? So they're liars. They're liars in the court because they tell the bar educated lawyers and judges, they tell them that statutes are law. That's a lie. They truly believe, these people truly believe statutes are law because they were taught that in school. They've been brainwashed. They believe that common law is no longer no longer available. That's been done away with. We don't have common law no more. Oh, no. You see, and they believe that lie. You know, we have the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution, and yet they say, well, the Constitution, that's for the federal thing, and the Bill of Rights. They actually say here in New York, the Bill of Rights is for the federal. It's not for us. So they've been lied to, and they believe the lie. We, the people, are not going to believe the lie. We are more than them, and we will overcome them, period.
Absolutely.
It's a war of words. Well, it's a war of words. When you challenge, if you notice one thing, they make statements and have nothing to back it up with. Absolutely nothing. Challenge them on that. Where's your authority? Where's your backup on this? And they'll make up things. Go check it out. You'll find out most of it's made up. Okay, that's how bad it is. But the bottom line is. They'll bring up things that have nothing to do with authorities and has nothing to do with anything that has happened. They may have bring up things of opposition as if it came, you know, went through a system and was, but no, it's not there. The true history shows that they didn't win. They didn't win anywhere. And they couldn't possibly win anyway, because if you get rid of common law, you get rid of the Constitution, you get rid of the Bill of Rights, you get rid of the Declaration of Independence, you get rid of the Bible, you get rid of the Magna Carta, you get rid of the Supreme Court, the Supremacy Clause, you get rid of all of it. We're at the mercy of the states who decided that they're going to get rid of everything. When we ordained and established this Constitution for them, they're underneath it, and we're above it. We're the ordainers. We're the kings, you see? So we have nullification, but we don't have power divided. We have power united, and that therein is nationallibertyalliance.org.
Absolutely. I appreciate the time that you have taken with me. I'm going to hop off of here so I can send you that email with the attached documents, and I will look forward to talking to you again next Monday.
I appreciate it. All right, do we have anybody else left? Okay. Anybody else left with questions? Okay, Daryl. Anybody else? We're going to close down shortly. But Daryl, you got the mic. You're open.
Thank you, John. Reason I'm calling back is there are some people on the chat,
that are requesting to have their questions answered, and apparently no one's reading it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Gerard, where you been? What's wrong with you? Is he still in the room? Where's Gerard at? Well, I guess he's gone. Okay, if you want to read some of those questions,
Some were back ways. Hopefully they'll hear this.
Anybody in the room that's still here that had text chat questions, go back, cut and paste them, and put them in now, and I'll pick them up as they show up on the text chat on the bottom. So if you have any questions from the chat, we should have been more watchful in the chat. And next week, we'll try to be more watchful. I'm hoping to go to the new place, but if we don't have this website up and no chat room, well, actually, this is what they have, their own chat room. We'll use their chat room, and so people will go out and be able to sign up and use that chat room. Eventually, we'll move over to our own chat room, but we can use their chat room, and we will be more conscious of the text chat and try to take questions from the text chat back and forth as we go along. So, okay, let's see. Jesse asked a question about access to the jurist list for me. Someone came forward asking for an investigation for the list of registered jurists. You can't give anybody... Look, at jurists are... When someone comes to you, you should call me. You know, and there are people here that have common law backgrounds, and they should be within your state. You should find some people there. And if you can't find, you can call me. And let's get the name of this person, let's get what they want in writing, and let's deal with these people, because that is a felony. Anybody who digs into the names of jurists, it's a felony, okay? And maybe these people need to go to jail. And so we need to be able to respond to them and deal with them. So nobody is to release the names of jurists. And by the way, remember, we don't come in the name of being the grand jury. We come in the name of being the administrators for the grand jury. This is so important. This is what keeps us it diffuses their attack upon us as claiming to be jurists. And remember, we may be sitting on a grand jury impaneled. There may be a grand jury in session, and we're impaneled on that grand jury. But generally, when we're not on that grand jury, we're talking to people. Even if we're investigating, even if we are on that grand jury, we are coming as administrators of the grand jury. We're acting on behalf of the grand jury. This is the will of the grand jury. That's how we talk to people. And that's why coming to these Monday night meetings is so important, to learn these things. And if we hear them enough times, it'll stick in our brains, you know. So who did you present the mandamus to? Well, we're not sure yet. We're probably going to present the mandamus to both the Greene County clerk in New York and the Greene County elected judge in New York. But we probably will put the mandamus to both of them, but we may only have evidence to put only one of them, have only one of them arrested. And someone's going to be arrested unless they yield and put forward this indictment that we filed, and they'll have 5 days. So that's where the mandamus will be going out. But until we finish our investigation tomorrow, well, we won't know exactly who and what we're going to say. So, can I send some USPS mail to Common Law Grand Jury Attention, John Durash, to your courthouse in Dutchess County? No, because we're in a tent outside the courthouse, so we don't have access into the courthouse yet. We're responding out of a tent, and we're not taking on any cases other than the case to get us into power that they're refusing to let us come into power, and that's the only battle we will fight here in New York. When that's accomplished, then we will be sitting inside the courthouse. Then we will have a mailbox in the courthouse. We will receive our mail in the courthouse, and then we will be, after we deal with all of the necessary people to bring everything to common law, then we'll be open to discuss other cases where people will bring cases to us, and we'll be going out on investigations. So, Let me see if there's any other questions down here. Who do can I send? Okay, do I go to? I'm not sure of the question. Jesse asked the question of access to the jurors list for me. Someone came forward asking an investigation for the list of registered jurors. Who do I go to? I'm not sure what that means. My message is on your Skype, John. Okay, I'll look and see for Veronica. It is huge that they are doing. When sending USPS, United States Postal Service, paperwork to court, clerk, use registered mail rather than certified. That would create a mailbox in the courthouse. Well, yeah, when you send mail to the courthouse for the purpose of sending them the declaration of the Constitution of a common law grand jury in your county, you'll send one copy to the chief court clerk, and you'll send another copy to the county clerk. And both of them take oaths, so they both should be filing it. The county clerk is for filing for a notice to all men. It's a memorial, and they file under miscellaneous, and they usually send it back. That's fine. Just keep it, and when we get in power, we'll put it back in. The other one goes to the chief court clerk, and again, that's for a memorial. It's a notification of the fact that grand juries have been elected, and they've been put on notice. And they should keep it in their files for a memorial. That's all. It doesn't have any real legal function in the sense of moving a case forward. It's just a notification, putting them on notice. And they should not send it back. It's rare if they send it back. You do need to do something certified registered. A certified comes with a number, and you can look up online that number and see what time and what date it arrived and if the signature was taken. And I don't think there's a signature taken for that, just that it arrived. You can require a signature, which is the green card, so it's certified, what is that called? Return slip. I know it's a green card. So you should do certified return slip, signature required. And you'll get back a signature card with a signature, and you put it in your file with your copy of your declaration. And you got proof that it went there. They can't deny that they didn't get it. And that's the key thing. Do not take it by hand. Do not get a process server to do it. Don't get the sheriff to do it. We went through all those potential scenarios. Use the post office to do it. You go in person, they have the opportunity to reject, and you can't prove anything. Now, they may try to make the argument that something else was in there. That's rare that anyone would do that. But it doesn't matter. We're honorable people. It was in there, and we don't care what they think, say, or do. We don't have to prove it. We said so. It's there. We are the true court. We're the people. return receipt. Yep. Okay. If there's no other questions, I'm getting tired. Let me see. I got one more from Jersey. North New Jersey, do you have a final question?
A question is not so much a question, but just a build-up. We are faced with many uncertainties, and we who are here listening are doing our best. The best thing we can do is have no fear, think for ourselves, and we become the greatest people, rebirth of our nation. For years, I'm 6 years old, and back when I was a small kid in elementary school, I knew something was wrong with this country because it said one thing, the hypocrisy was unbelievable. But we will take back our republic and make the best of what we have, and no one can put you down unless you let them. And as long as we are focused on the greatness of the purpose of serving our fellow man and the redemption of a republic, we will be the best republic and nation in the world. Thank you.
Well, amen. You know, our founding fathers started a revolution, and it hasn't ended. and we need to finish it. We have the ability to finish the revolution right here with what we're doing. It's up to us, and if necessary, we should die doing it. We cannot cower from this. We can't run from this. We can't hide from this, because if we return back to being the proverbial ostrich with our head in the sand, they're going to come and get us, and then we're going to wish we made the battle here. We can do it. We can stop them right here. And only the people can save America. So, okay, with that, I don't see any other hands up. I don't see any other questions in the text chat. Let me just take a quick look. I don't see any. Okay. I appreciate everyone coming. Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. I want to try real hard to be on the new platform, which is Blog Talk Radio. They do have a chat room. You'll have to register to get in there to use the chat room, or you can just call in. There'll be a phone number. We will post all that information up on nationallibertyalliance.org on our Monday night meeting page. If worse comes to worse, and we may be here one more week, but we're going to try our hardest not to be. If you're not on our mailing list, get registered and join the meetup group, and you'll be on our mailing list. Anybody who doesn't know about the meetup group, there's some people, I guess, they don't realize we have a meetup, a national meetup group. If you go to the top of our page, let me see if it's left side or right side. On the top of our page on nationallibertyalliance.org, on the top right side, you'll see Join Our National Meetup. If you click on that, you'll get the email and notifications of everything we're doing, whatever's going on. You'll get notifications there. There's also there's some chat. We try to keep the email chat to a bare minimum, focused in on edification concerning what we're talking about here, which is common law and the grand jury. We also have chat rooms, what do they call it, message boards, they call it, on the meetup, so you can use them too. But eventually the website the new website will take on all of those things. We'll probably still maintain the National Liberty Alliance meetup group anyway, but we'll see how things go. Look at LNX13's question. You'll have to cut and paste it for me to look at it. I don't know where it's at. I'm scrolling back and I don't see it. So if you can hurry up and scroll back and cut and paste it and throw it out in the chat, I'll try to respond to that question. All right. I guess that's it. Well, any questions could be brought up next Monday. We'll be back open again for that. And again, we'll try to be on the new setup. We'll let you know. It'll be posted on our website, and we will send out mass emails to everyone we have on our lists, and you'll know. All right, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday night. Good night.
Good night.